here very shortly.
We are on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 14th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. It's a pleasure to be back with colleagues who all look quite refreshed from a little time off, a couple weeks off. And as we always do, we'll start, if you would, by rising and joining me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we start with the business today, just a couple of acknowledgments here. The first one, a sad one. We'd like to turn it over to Supervisor Ashajian for a remembrance of Isabel Ruiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We, the community, lost a good friend, Isabel Ruiz, to cancer. Isabel spent the last 20 years of her life trying to help increase cancer awareness within our county. And her goal in life was to reach out for those who were less fortunate, and she was to be sure that every child had access to health care. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, my colleagues, to have a moment of silence in her honor and memory. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sajjan. And on behalf of the board, our thoughts go out to her family and to the many people that she touched in this county. The other acknowledgement I'd like to make is to our clerk of the board, who I have a sense is listening. Katrina Christensen is in the hospital up at Twin Cities today and might be there for a little while longer. If the nurses can control her, I'm sure that her ebullient spirit is no doubt posing the best sort of challenge to them, but we did want to acknowledge her absence and wish her the very best. With that, we'll turn to our Assistant Clerk, Ms. Grayton, for updates to the agenda, please.
We have one added item to close session today. Under pending litigation, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, number 21, San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Water Control District versus Nesbitt, Civil Case 070563. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied, as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, ma'am. With that brings us then to our consent agenda. I have a couple of requests to speak. We'll start with Andy Caldwell, followed by Eric Greening.
Chairman Gibson, members of the board, I'm Andy Caldwell, representing the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business of San Luis Obispo County. As you know, I also serve in that capacity in Santa Barbara County, and I have so for the last 18 years. And a number of times over that, probably at least 10 times, I've been called before the grand jury to testify. Of course, the first thing they ask you to do is sign a piece of paper, an acknowledgement that you won't tell anybody what you talked about. And, of course, they never reveal their sources, and they never do anything other than issue a report unless they're going to hand something over to criminal proceedings. But in Santa Barbara County, the grand jury must be held in higher regard than this county because they don't put grand jury reports on the consent calendar. Grand juries are citizen watchdogs. They are empowered to investigate where average citizens cannot. They're allowed to make people swear to tell the truth, which average citizens cannot. And they get the respect to be put on the departmental agenda and have a full hearing of their report. And unfortunately, your county did not do that with an item that is extremely important. And that is when people come before you or they come before the Planning Commission, they're hoping to get a fair hearing. And unfortunately, a single planning commissioner has been singled out by the grand jury for what they consider to be an unacceptable probability of actual bias. Now, those are legal terms. Those are words that come out of a court case. This is a scandal. And it's also a scandal because it's not the first time this particular planning commissioner has been singled out. We're wondering, what would it take to get the attention of the full board that you have a problem child on your hands? Now, specifically, one of the other legal terms that was acknowledged by your county council had to do with what was called a non-involved reviewer, that the people have a right to believe that the person hearing their case will be a non-involved reviewer. And yet, what's documented in this grand jury report is this planning commissioner called in a hit, a late hit, from the Department of Fish and Game. That is not the role of a planning commissioner, that's the role of an activist. That is not the evidence of a non-involved reviewer to call in and ask for basically an airstrike on a target. We think you should put this on your departmental calendar, and you should also review the fact that the grand jury talked to senior management staff in your planning department, and they said, we have biased commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell.
We ask that you remove Sarah Christie.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Mr. Greening, followed by C.Z. Whitney.
I am Eric Greening, and I'm primarily talking about item A7 and A27, but I do believe that public agencies in California should not necessarily be compared to airstrikes, since they themselves are presumed to be non-biased and are supposed to know what's going on and respond to it. And item A7 is another grand jury report on the planning process improving hearing procedures, and this is based on issues relative to the Salinas River and gravel extraction and multiple applications for projects there. And I guess one of my basic questions in relation to the county's response, both the supervisor's response and the planning department's response, is what is the harm in advising applicants to anticipate and consider cumulative impacts at the earliest appropriate time? Why should we make an issue of resisting that? The cumulative impacts are there. Rivers operate as systems. What was not considered by either the grand jury or the responses is that there is also a cumulative demand side for this material, and much of that demand side comes from projects approved by your board. And some of them have to do with development, some of them have to do with road expansions. On your COG plate, you saw the letter from Will Campton saying basically, because we're expanding so many roads, we need more of this stuff, and you have a local responsibility to produce more of this stuff. So I think you should be considering the cumulative impacts not only at the extraction point, but also every time you consider a project that would use this, you should be considering that cumulative impact on the stream system. A27 is a habitat conservation plan for the northeast part of the county, and my question there, part of what's paying for this is what's called the landowner / major stakeholders match, and I'm wondering if this is the money that's collected from project applicants pursuant to Kit Fox mitigation, because my understanding was that that money was going to go into acquisition of habitat and or easements and not into a habitat conservation plan, which actually can become a take permit, meaning that the animals lose on both sides of the equation. So I think applicants have been paying in good faith into a fund that has been assumed to provide conservation easements, acquisitions, things like that, that are actual physical help for the creatures. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Whitney, followed by Carol Schmidt.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. Charlie Whitney from the Santa Margarita area on item A6. First of all, I'd like to thank the members of the grand jury who took the time, and it is a lot of time that they put into this effort. into all efforts when they do their investigations. I think it's something that really warrants your attention and a little bit more attention than just putting it on as a consent item. I think you ought to be actually addressing these items up front and individually. I think the grand jury was somewhat frustrated. That's what I read into their report. And the terms bias and ex parte contacts came up time and time again in their report. I think these are very important matters that all of you need to be aware of. And I think they're frustrated because you have an individual who is the planning commissioner in question who has tremendous knowledge and background in both land use and regulatory areas, who knows just the very edge of the law and how to skirt that law on the very edge. I think that's a very important point. And I think this is why this is now the second time that this commissioner has been investigated by the grand jury. This is something that is really important because due process is one of the most important rights that we have under the Constitution, and it certainly should be afforded to any applicant who comes before the Planning Commission or the Board of Supervisors. Now, I think one of the reasons that they did acknowledge the supervisor in question's background in the regulatory and land use area was that they simply said, "We're not praising you for this. We acknowledge it. We recognize it. You should have known better." I think that's the message there. To the supervisor who appointed the planning commissioner in question, this is now two strikes. In California, we have a three strikes law. This may not be criminal, but it certainly ought to apply. Three strikes and you're out. There, you know there is something out there that will either occur or has already occurred that involves the type of activity that the grand jury has been involved in and has been investigating under item A6. And I hope that at some point in time you will really look into this and give it a lot more thought than you were giving it just as a consent item. As I said, three strikes and you're out. I think it's coming. The planning commissioner in question cannot help herself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. Ms. Schmidt.
Good morning. I'm Carol Schmidt. I'm the program director for Senior Peer Counseling, operating under the auspices of Wilshire Community Services. And I just wanted to talk a minute about item A25, the Mental Health Services Act monies for prevention and early intervention for older adults. We are very excited about the prospects ahead of us. We're poised to grow the programs. My colleague Suzanne McFarlane and I are working very hard to meet the requirements that have been laid out before us. It's always challenging because our services are completely volunteer-based, and we know there's a great need in the community among older adults, and we are committed to doing our best to retain and recruit the volunteers needed to meet the needs of our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. That concludes our public comment on the consent agenda. So close it to the public, bring it back to the board, ask colleagues if they have items for separate consideration. Mr. Hill.
Just a comment on A19, thank you.
Mr. Shahjian.
None, thank you.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, item A6, item A18, and item A27.
And Mr. Meacham. All right, I'd like to make a couple comments on A24 and A26. So, leading by the numbers, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to Mr. Caldwell and Mr. Whitney's comments, which were rather pointed but not accurate. I will quote from the findings of the grand jury's report on item A6 regarding the Planning Commission. It says, "The facts established by the grand jury investigation of Planning Commissioner conduct did not constitute either evidence of possible criminal conduct or willful or corrupt misconduct in office by any Planning Commissioner." And that was their finding relative to that particular issue. And then they go on to make some findings regarding the handbook that's given to Planning Commissioners and some of the items that they think should be addressed relative to the handbook. There have been two grand jury investigations of the Planning Commission over the past 5 years that I've been on the board, and both of those hearings vindicated fully the Planning Commission and refuted the accusations that were made, and just because someone raises accusations about any item or issue does not necessarily mean that they're valid, and that's what the grand jury found in the case this time. Item A18 is a request by General Services to essentially utilize a process that has been used for the Cambria Library for the Atascadero Library. Both communities are undergoing an effort to expand their libraries, and I support that effort. It's going to save both Cambria citizens as well as Atascadero citizens a tremendous amount of money, because they're both using the same process rather than doing it separately at full cost. So they're saving money and a considerable amount of time by joining together and working together, and I want to thank General Services for making that suggestion and moving the process forward. And relative to item A27, Mr. Greening raised a question. Mr. Keith is here from planning, and I'd like to ask him to address Mr. Greening's comments relative to that stakeholder share of the funding.
Sure. Trevor Keith, Environmental Division. It's two separate programs. The mitigation fund is separate from the HCP effort that's going on, and the contribution from the landowner stakeholder contingent is for the HCP that's currently underway for the Shandon Community Plan. So two separate efforts. We're not delving into the mitigation fund.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Keith, for that clarification. And my comment on A27 is this has been a long time coming. We've been trying to work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Fish and Game, as well as private landowners that want to develop in that area, to come up with a conservation plan that will address the biological issues in that area. And this particular item is announcing the receipt of a $500,000 grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to begin this process, and it's an example of federal, state, and local government, as well as the private sector, joining together to address this issue. It'll be a 2 or 3 year process, but once that's done, we'll have this program in place that will benefit not only the biological resources, but also the ability to develop in that area. And the county, the city of Paso Robles, as well as some private developers, and as I said, the state and federal governments are joining in this effort. And so I appreciate planning, getting to the point where we can move forward with this. And those are my comments.
All right. Thank you, sir. Before I pass it over to Supervisor Hill, I'll just comment on A18 myself, that the Cambria Friends of the Library appreciates this deal, too, because it saves them money and furthers their projects. So it's working on a number of different fronts. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. Wanted to thank Mr. Leo for this is on the Bob Jones bike trail, and just amending a we're in a very difficult and crucial part of the extension of this very important part of our county, the Bob Jones bike trail, and she came last night to brief members of the Avila Valley Advisory Council on things and to take their feedback, and the EIR process is underway, I believe, so I just want to thank her, and this is a really important part of it that will hopefully connect the trail from the Octagon Barn all the way across to Avila Beach, which will be terrific for our county.
Good stuff. Long time coming, and we're looking forward to that ribbon cutting ceremony any day now. Looking forward to it. I'll just finish with a couple of quick comments on A24 and 26. These are both behavioral health contracts that are being funded by the Mental Health Services Act. It's, I think, the one bright spot in the otherwise dismal world of health and human services funding in this state and in this county. Both of these reach out toward youth and their families. A24 to provide prevention and early intervention services to at-risk middle school-aged youth throughout the county, and A26 to provide similar sorts of services as well as academic and vocational development guidance to transitional age youth who are coming out of foster care. And neither one of these items in the agenda or in the memos really references the activities of our Anti-Gang Coordinating Commission, but I just wanted to point out that these are the very sorts of programs that support our efforts to suppress gangs and gang violence in this community. And it's the early intervention, the provision of support for families with troubled youth is getting at the root of the problem. I had a good conversation with Mr. Hamm of the health agency yesterday, who assured me that the folks in behavioral health, as well as throughout the health agency and the Department of Social Services, work very hard to coordinate their efforts so that we can provide these services that avoid problems before they start. So I appreciate these things going forward. We have some prototype projects of this sort that are up and running in a couple of communities, and I'm very heartened to see that this moves forward. So with that, I'd entertain a motion on consent.
Of approval.
We have Mr. Meacham, seconded by Mr. Ashajian. And Madam Clerk, a roll call.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. So we'll come to our public comment period for items not on the agenda. I have two requests to speak. Mr. Greening, followed by Carolyn Silas Novak.
Hello, I am still Eric Greening, and I think we were maybe all hoping that while you had your little break time, the folks in Sacramento would get it all figured out, but obviously here we are again. My question is, is the county getting IOUs from the state where it was expecting real money, and do we need an agenda item to sit down with the treasurer and the auditor controller and affected department heads to actually understand the impacts and how we can best adapt to those impacts? Because I know IOUs sometimes can be negotiated as if they were real money on the assumption that they will eventually be paid back with real money. Sometimes they can't, and everyone is in more or less a state of uproar and confusion right now because of the state of things. Of course, the other angle to that, you have been very strong advocates in Sacramento for a very scarce commodity called sanity. And I don't know if this is a point at which redoubling of those efforts, fine-tuning of those efforts, or anything else is called for. But again, if an agenda item is timely, and of course any information brought to such an agenda item would probably be very last minute, but if such an agenda item is timely, I definitely know that Sacramento needs to keep hearing from us again and again and again. And I have to sort of speak over your heads to the voters. Collectively, statewide, the approval rate of our legislature is 11%. Individually, district by district, incumbents, when they're running for re-election, almost invariably get re-elected. We, the people, owe it to the people we want representing us to let them know what our expectations are and hold them to those expectations. Ultimately, it is we, the people, who are to blame for this utter chaos, irresolution, posturing, empty rhetoric, and all of the other garbage which is coming our way from Sacramento before the big shoes land. So it's on all of us. But certainly you, as the official representatives of our county, can focus your voice in ways that the rest of us can't. And so I urge you to do whatever you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Before we hear from Ms. Novak, let me just comment that as I left on break, I stopped in Sacramento and visited with our state senator briefly, gave him the letter that we passed the Tuesday before we broke on the gasoline tax takeaway. And just yesterday had some feedback that the proposal we made, which was to suggest that they do a hike in the gas tax to service their debt service rather than stealing the, or how should we say, transferring the local share, the local share that would gut our, that transfer of what would gut our road program, that there's still consideration of that. But indeed, as I track on behalf of CSAC budget task force that I sit on, every day we either hear something new or nothing at all, and it's quite uncertain exactly where they're going. I will be attending this Friday and Saturday a budget reform summit as this budget crisis, I don't think there's any other word for it, has evolved. Great concern has been raised both among counties through CSAC, but also through the League of Cities and the California School Boards Association, and those three groups have come together to sponsor a summit that's going to start talking about how we might reform this system to get a more rational result. Last I heard, there are going to be something like 500 delegates to that summit right now, and I think what we're seeing is a tremendous outpouring of concern for the local level that our mutual constituents, the constituents that both the legislature and local boards represent, are not being treated in the best possible way. So we'll be looking forward to updating you on any results that might come of that. With that, Ms. Novak.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm Carolyn, and I am a local and national Red Cross volunteer, which means I'm on call 365 days a year, 24 hours a day nationally if something happens around our country and a region, a county, a city cannot help itself on its own, I will go in and I will respond. I'm a local volunteer, which means I'm on call 10 days, 7 to 10 days every month, and that means if something happens to one person or 500 people or 1,000 people, I will respond. I'm not committed to the Red Cross, and I'm committed to our mission, which is to respond and help people prepare for a disaster. Well, I'm here because I'm reaching out to you. I'm hoping that I can get a little help from you when it comes to preparedness, because really, you are our leaders. You are the people that all of the people in our county reach out to when things go wrong, whether they're political, whether they're a man-made disaster, or whether they're a natural disaster. And there are disasters that happen all the time, I'm sure daily, when it comes to what you deal with here in our county, but even on a broader scale, when it comes to disasters that we cannot control, that we don't expect and we don't know are coming, we need to start thinking about it because they do happen. It's cyclical, disasters happen, whether it's a flood or a tsunami or an earthquake or a small house fire or a huge brush fire or a mobile home fire, they happen. And we, as your Red Cross here in our county, we represent you, but we also need you. We survive completely on local donations. I'm not asking for money. Believe it or not, I'm a nonprofit, and I'm coming and I'm asking you for energy, motivation, time, acknowledgement. We need to be ready for whatever may come. We learned a lot down south after the Hayseseeta fire. We learned a lot down south after the Montecito T fire. We learned a heck of a lot after those hurricanes 4 years ago, believe it or not, it was 4 years ago, that hit the Gulf Coast region. And I was there. I was in New Orleans. I was in Baton Rouge. I was there giving my time, and what that did for me was it motivated me to come back here to our county and work better, harder, stronger, longer to get us ready for whatever might occur. You're our leaders. If you're not ready, how can our county get ready? Think about it personally. If an earthquake hit us right now at 9:29 on Tuesday, July 14th, are you personally ready? Do your families have plans? Because the truth is, our county is going to look to you for answers right after that disaster strikes. I'm going to look to you because we're going to all be working together to make sure our county gets up, running, safely, quickly. Our water supply, our food supply, our roads, our prison, our hospitals, our assisted living facilities, our schools. We look to you for support and help and answers. But if you, individually, and your families are not ready, then we won't be able to handle it very well. I'm hoping that my 3 minutes here makes you think about it, because we don't think about it on a regular basis. Get ready. What will you do to get back to work right away and to come and lead our county? Do you have supplies at home for your family? Do you have a plan for your pets, your elderly relatives? What about evacuation? Think about it. Carolyn Novak at the Red Cross, 543-0696. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Novak, and thank you for the information. I've heard you speak on a number of occasions and always appreciate your energy put to that, put to this effort.
Chairman, if I might, just
Mr. Meacham.
To just tail on to Carolyn's comments, we too went through this several years ago with an earthquake, and afterwards we started doing on a quarterly basis kind of a health and safety fair throughout the city. And I can tell you, as hard as you try, it's usually those that are prepared, like the Red Cross and others, that attend those. And trying to get the word out, I mean, not trying to get the word out, but trying to get people interested in that, I think is an ongoing effort. And I didn't care if there was one person there or if there were 500 people there, get it out in front of folks to let them know it's not if, but when the next situation will arise. My wife and I sat down a couple years ago, and we did map things out. We did buy the packs and everything else. They're in the cars. They're ready to go in different places. And those are gifts that we're going to be giving our kids, too. So I appreciate what you just said, and I think that it's incumbent upon us to continue to espouse this message to the folks out there. So thank you.
Maybe we'll have her come back every 3 months.
Yeah, I think a quarterly pep talk would be most in order, and eventually it'll sink in.
Somebody will get a message.
I'm getting it right out of town with Frank.
With that, close public comment and proceed now with the kind announcement of Madam Clerk to start our first hearing item, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the addition of delinquent service charges for County Service Area Number 16, Shandon Water Service, County Service Area 23, Santa Margarita Water Service, and County Service Area 10A, Cayucas Water Services, to the 2009-2010 property tax bills, 1st and 2nd districts. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Ms. Brunick, I presume.
Correct. Good morning, Honorable Board. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with the County Public Works Department. This is a routine annual process to place county service area delinquent service charges on the tax roll. The Public Works Department is recommending that your board adopt a resolution which authorizes these various delinquent county service area water service charges to be collected on the tax roll. These delinquencies represent less than 0.5% of the total annual water revenues for the following county service areas: CSA 16-1, Shandon Area, CSA 10A, Cayugas. The property owners subject to this collection method were notified by mail on June 2, 2009, and were given the opportunity to pay the amount owed. All the required notices have been met, and this concludes my staff report, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Brunick? Seeing none, we'll open it to the public. I have no requests to speak, and seeing no one coming forward, we'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for action.
I move staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Mr. Hill and Mr. Patterson. And Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Asajj?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead and introduce our next hearing item.
Item C2 is a continued hearing regarding the proposed mosquito, vector, and disease control assessment. This item was continued from June 23, 2009. Action is to declare the results.
Thank you. Mr. Hamm.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Jeff Hamm, Health Agency. This is a continued public hearing from June 23rd relative to the vector control benefit assessment ballot measure, and the single purpose is to declare the results. Julie Rodewald certified the results. The certification's in your packet. The measure failed, and I'm prepared to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. We have Mr. Shajian, followed by Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hamm, since this item failed, that also means that we have absolutely no services in place as we did in the past prior to this measure on the ballot, correct?
We'll have some services available through the end of the calendar year.
End of the fiscal year? Calendar year.
Calendar year. The two employees who currently work in the program were among those that would have been laid off, but because of the SLOC agreement have been, that action's been deferred until the end of December.
What I wanted to ask my colleagues and yourself, instead of letting that expire at the end of the calendar year and have nothing to offer to the community in the areas that we had some services available, is to bring an item back on the agenda to see what we can do about it and maintain the services that we have in place prior to it expiring at the end of the year, since all the efforts were gone towards the ballot measure, but not completely get rid of what we have in place.
Well, from my perspective, we stand prepared to work with the administrative office and your board to bring an item for your consideration. It was one of 30 programs on the cut list going into the current fiscal year, and as you know, the state budget continues to present considerable risk to many of our programs in terms of their state funding. These services are important. We didn't put them on the list,
but the reason that
easily,
I'm sorry, but the reason that this was cut because there was emphasis on what was going forward on a ballot, correct?
No, actually, no? Okay. If the ballot measure had not even been something that we were moving forward with, I think we would have been forced, as we developed those service level reductions for your consideration in the budget development process, we didn't give that any consideration. It's $200,000 of general fund support in a discretionary program, and while it's important, we have many important programs.
From your point of view, how important that we have something in place, regardless of the level? $50,000, $200,000, $100,000, what level of services that we have to have in place for some level of safety?
I'm not intimately familiar with the history, but generally speaking, up until about 03 or 04, we didn't have a dedicated vector control program. The board at that time committed to a level of service that was recommended at that time. It was 3 FTEs and about $300,000. Over the last 2 years, that's gone down to $200,000, and then in this year's budget development process, gone down to zero. We placed it on I don't have the list, but we placed the $200,000 of general fund support for this program about halfway down the list of cuts that we submitted for the 09-10 budget. So there were things, while it was a difficult process to go through, there were things that we thought we should keep doing beyond, and there were things further down the list, more painful reductions than this one. This one happened to be, as you know, the subject of a grand jury investigation a couple years ago now, and when we were prompted to respond to it, we had to tell your board what we thought, which was that, yes, we are funding this program at an insufficient level, and it continues to present a requirement on the general fund, and we thought the ballot measure was an appropriate course of action. But it does put us in a difficult position, and as I said, we'd be happy to report back to your board in a strategic planning session or in whatever context you would like about this program and what we might be able to do.
I think it's up to the rest of my colleagues as where they would like to see it go.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a similar conversation with Mr. Hamm yesterday, and as he stated, we do have this current level of service continuing through this calendar year, and knowing with great certainty that we will suffer some consequence from whatever budget is adopted by the state, a consequence that will impact our health services, and we will be dealing with the health services or health agency budget sometime in the relatively near future, I think it would be appropriate to just have this conversation when we revisit the health agency budget as a result of cuts that are coming or anticipated from the state budget. So knowing, again, that the level of service we currently enjoy will continue for the next 5 months, we do have a little bit of time to reevaluate it in the context of everything else that the health agency does. And I think that would be the most appropriate way to pursue it.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Grant.
Jim Grant, County Administrator. I was just wanted to echo Supervisor Patterson's comments on that it would be appropriate, I think, to wait until we know what the state has in store for us, bring it back as a comprehensive package, not only for health, but any other services that we're looking at, and discuss those in detail at that point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. I mean, my thought on that was in listening to the testimony of Mr. Batson of Environmental Health, that whereas we have a program in place that's trying to get ahead of the problem, that without the ballot measure and without the funding in the budget, we're forced into a reactive mode on this in a way. We will react to public health threats. And in terms of the discussion of how we approach this problem, some discussion of how we would react given less than complete proactive abilities on this subject might be a useful conversation as well. Did accumulate a couple of speaker slips on this matter, so at this point I will open it to the public. Eric Greening, followed by Alon Perlman.
I'm Eric Greening. I'm not surprised by the ballot result, and I do favor the comprehensive look. At the budget hearings, you did leave $700,000 in the health department, and you sort of tentatively indicated a list of capital projects for which it would be used. And I'm glad to hear that the conversation has opened on, oh yes, there is a cut list, and maybe we could use some of that SLOC money to deal with this draconian cut list, which may get even more draconian as whatever shoes fall from Sacramento fall on us. And I do believe that conversation should be comprehensive and not just involve cherry-picking this particular item out of the middle of the cut list, because there was already a degree of thought and prioritization that went into the sequence of programs on the cut list. So my hope is that the reassurance you gave me at the budget hearings that the capital projects seemingly indicated in the budget language are not set in stone, that you do have the flexibility to go back. SLOC actually gave back their deserved raises in good faith in the hopes of saving their colleagues' jobs. And that speaks to ongoing operations of services to the community that are threatened with amputation or are already being amputated. And so, obviously, we need to have this conversation include such things as breastfeeding and the warm line. That's in the process of being amputated or greatly downsized right now. Have all these competing needs in front of you. My understanding is the Health Commission will be considering their advice on this $700,000 next month, capital projects versus cut list. It may be that some of the capital projects need to stay on. I know the Atascadero Clinic definitely needs some help. The EIR on sludge is probably considerably less urgent since you have another 3.5 years for the interim moratorium to run. But I do think we need to look back and realize one salutary lesson was that $250,000 that was spent on this balloting effort is gone, and we're not getting that back. So in the future, I hope that any ballot measures are better thought out, the process is better thought out, and that it's more a process of getting on people on board rather than alienating them with a skewed process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Perlman, followed by C.Z. Whitney.
Hi, my name is Alon Perlman. I live in Los Osos. Prior to living in Los Osos, I had two careers. One was
as a clinical microbiologist. The other was a clinical research associate. I did involve myself with clinical trials. I spoke before you against the 218 vote, and the reason I spoke before you, I'll repeat those reasons. Nevertheless, the county does need to have a flexible vector control program. It has to be a flexible vector control program because epidemiology doesn't really work well with predictions. It's actually particularly true when you don't have a high level of cases. When you have a high level of cases, there's certain models that work, some do, some don't. It's hard to predict, but for example, if you have 600 cases, you may be in a situation where you are on a rapid increase and next year you'll have twice as many cases. But when you're dealing with a very small number of cases, which is what the county was dealing with the vector control program, that was not the time to expand that program. Additionally, the threats that are facing the county, again, they're unpredictable. They're not known. There's going to be changes in weather pattern in our lifetimes that are going to completely alter the entry of these disease vectors and their behaviors. I think a little bit of old-fashioned Yankee ingenuity might serve you a little better. I think a discarded tire day, I think certain counties have that. You simply task Mr. I think it's Art Trinidad to pick up every discarded tire in the county, and you've eliminated a significant amount of breeding space for the vector without a huge cost. So try and retain the staff you have, the trained staff that you have, but do not plan for contingencies that may not happen. Plan for contingencies that you don't expect, and that means structuring these departments to deal with threats, to be able to change course when a new threat arises. And so that was my prime, and obviously the measure didn't pass. I doubt it was my testimony that stopped it from going through, but nevertheless, I just want to use this opportunity to remind supervisors to avoid typological thinking, the kind of thinking that says, oh, we have an epidemic, we should deal with it now, it's the flavor of the moment. Try and create flexible programs that can deal with any threat, including biological, including terrorism. There's money, actually, if you can structure your programs that way. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman. Mr. Whitney.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, supervisors. Charlie Whitney on behalf of CoLab, briefly on this. We're amused by the difference in responses from grand jury reports. In this particular case, you chose to spend $250,000 or more on setting up an election so that you could establish $1 million a year vector control district. Earlier this morning, you kind of blew off the grand jury, which I think is unfortunate. At any rate, we would like to thank Supervisor Hill for his reflection on and reasoning on not supporting this program. I think that was very wise. I would also like to thank Supervisor Meacham for his motion and thank Supervisor Ashajian for joining the majority in this case. I think it was the right thing to do. This was a tremendous waste of time, resources, and money. I think the people who preceded me speaking here today have spoken to the program and the type of controls, you know, vector controls that could be implemented in this county. What's really unfortunate is you kind of counted your chickens before they hatched in this case because you had a guarantee from the consultant that you paid a lot of money to that this was a no-fail situation, that you'd get this district passed, and it didn't, and it failed miserably. And I think dismantling whatever program was in place at the time was a mistake until you absolutely knew what was going to happen. I think the other program had some flexibility to it to where you could respond in those years where there were greater problems. As I said, before you ever do this again, and you go off on one of these processes, which with the 218 process is kind of a questionable process. I realize it's legal, but it certainly has a lot of shortcomings, and I think you really did turn off the voters in a lot of ways in moving forward with that effort. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. That was my last request to speak, so we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. In terms of action here, There's not a resolution in our packet, a simple motion declaring the result and endorsing the clerk's certification, I think, would be sufficient. I'm getting nods from Mr.
Second.
Ham. We have Mr. Meacham, Mr. Shajan, and I believe we can execute that on a voice vote. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
And opposed, none. So that concludes that item. With uncharacteristic efficiency and speed, we arrive at our last hearing item of the morning. And as I look out in the audience, I see some of the parties to this appeal, but not all of them. So I'm going to propose we take a 20-minute break, reconvene at 10 minutes after 10. Introduce our next hearing item, please.
Item C3 is a continued hearing to consider an appeal by Land Watch San Luis Obispo County and by the Sierra Club of the Subdivision Review Board's approval of a request by Hearst Holdings Incorporated for lot line adjustment coastal development permit COAL 07-0070 to adjust the lot lines between four existing parcels of 0.17 acres, 443.18 acres, 10,180 acres, and 23,040 acres, located along the 14-mile section of the north coast, beginning approximately 1.5 miles north of San Simeon Village and ending at Ragged Point, excluding some land near the Piedras Blancas Light Station, 2nd District. Item continued from May 5, 2009, recommend denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Mr. Jansen? No. Mr. Singelwald?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I have a PowerPoint presentation here. Yeah. Yes, it's on. Erlen Singelwald, Department of Planning and Building. So this is an appeal of the Hearst Holdings lot line adjustment by the Sierra Club and Land Watch. The purpose of this lot line adjustment is to bring the existing parcel boundaries in line with three of the conservation easement areas established under the Hearst Conservation Plan. And just a very, very brief background on the conservation plan, that was a multifaceted transaction between Hearst and the state. So it was a private agreement between Hearst and the state involving measures for the permanent conservation of the 82,000-acre Hearst Ranch. It's important to point out here that no physical development is actually proposed as part of this lot line adjustment. And I have listed here on your PowerPoint the three easement areas that this lot line adjustment is related to, and I'm going to discuss those more further on in the presentation. This table here just summarizes the existing and proposed parcel sizes. All I really want to point out on this slide is you can see here that the main focus of this lot line adjustment is parcel 1 and parcel 2, where parcel 1 is significantly increased in size from around 7,400 square feet to nearly 94 acres. And you can see here parcel 2 is also significantly increased in size as a result of the lot line adjustment. Here's the land use category map and also the vicinity map to help you get your bearings here. The castle is located here. And we're about 1.5 miles north of the town of San Simeon. You have Ragged Point here, Piedras Blancas, San Simeon Point, the old San Simeon Village area here. And also the project site is, the majority of the project site is on the east side of Highway 1, with the only exception being the San Simeon Point and old San Simeon Village areas. The land use categories are predominantly in the agriculture category. There's also some land in the recreation land use category here on the point, and there is commercially designated land here at the old San Simeon Village area. Aerial image not showing up.
It was over the water, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
You move a little landward, I think, if you could get it.
moving along. So this slide here shows the existing parcel configuration, and you'll note that you really only see three different colors here, and that's because existing parcel one is so small, about 7,000 square feet, that it doesn't even show up on this scale. But you can see there's a small little speck here. That's existing parcel one. Existing parcel two is essentially the whole San Simeon Point area going around existing parcel one. Existing parcel three and four are on the east side of the highway. And here's the proposed parcel configuration. So you can see that tiny 7,000 square foot existing parcel one now covers this larger 94-acre area. The remainder of the point and on the east side of the highway is proposed parcel two. And then proposed three and four are reduced in size as a result of this adjustment. I just want to summarize here that proposed parcel one would correspond with the old San Simeon Village easement area of the conservation plan. This is where the allowable development under the private agreement between Hearst and the state would be limited to a 100-room hotel. Proposed parcel two west of the highway is the San Simeon Point conservation area, and that's under the Caltrans Scenic Protection easement. Essentially, no development is allowed in that area under, again, the conservation plan. I'm going to talk a little later about what the LCP, the Local Coastal Program, would allow. To the east of proposed parcel two on the east side of the highway is the headquarters easement area. That's one of the easement areas described in the conservation plan, about 1,500 acres. And again, I'm going to show the existing and proposed lot configuration, but focused in on San Simeon Point, which is really the main focus of this lot line adjustment. So on this one, you can actually see existing parcel one surrounded by existing parcel two and parcel three on the east side of the highway. And here is the proposed configuration with the 94 acres here corresponding with the old San Simeon Village conservation area of the conservation plan. The remainder of that is proposed parcel two, and to the east of the highway is the 1,500-acre headquarters area, which would also be part of proposed parcel two. Now I'm going to show the existing and proposed parcel configuration at San Simeon Point, but this time with the land use categories as an overlay here. You can see that there is mixed zoning here at San Simeon Point. There's, of course, agriculture, recreation, and commercial retail. So this is the existing configuration, and here's the proposed configuration. And I just want to point out here that the lot line adjustment does not in any way affect the land use categories at the site. Of course, the general plan amendment would be required to change the land use category. So it's only changing the parcel boundaries. Land use categories remain the same, and proposed parcel one here becomes a single development site. It just has three separate land use categories on it.
And as I understand it, Mr. Singwald, the existing parcels have multiple land use categories within one parcel, at least on a couple of occasions, right?
Right. So here's existing parcel two, same ag, rec,
and CR. Okay.
Propose now there's multiple land use categories on both proposed parcel one and proposed parcel two west of the highway. And this here, just to clarify, this is the visitor center, which is owned by the state. Now, as we all know, the San Simeon Point and Old San Simeon Village area is a very unique area that contains many important coastal resources. And as such, our local coastal program actually has very specific use limitation standards and development standards for this area. Now, I know this is more information than I should probably have on a PowerPoint slide. I don't expect you to actually read all this. I just want to point out that we have language directly in the North Coast Area Plan of the LCP that says exactly how this site must be developed. So here in the commercial retail portion of the site. The uses are limited to relatively lower intensity uses, such as smaller restaurants and tourist-oriented retail stores. The local coastal program, where the real larger scale intensive development would occur, or where it's allowed to occur, is here in the recreation land use category. And that includes, under the current local coastal program, what's allowed is up to a 250-room resort, 150-seat restaurant, cocktail lounge, convention center, golf course. That's what's allowed by the current LCP. And also, the LCP is very specific about where the footprint of that development should occur, and that's in accordance with Figure 4-2 of the North Coast Area Plan. And here I'm just pointing out that regardless of the parcel configuration, existing or proposed, the local coastal program has the same development standards that apply to this site. It's obvious, but just wanted to pick that here. And here's Figure 4-2 of the North Coast Area Plan, showing where the locations of the development should occur, or where they must occur. And you'll see here the 250-room resort would be located in this area on San Simeon Point in the recreation land use category. Now, remember I mentioned that the point under the conservation plan is under a Caltrans Scenic Protection Easement, which would not allow any development in that location. So we received two separate appeals from Land Watch and the Sierra Club. Your staff report provides a fairly detailed analysis of the various issues raised in those appeals. So for the purpose of my presentation this morning, I just want to focus on the general themes of the appeals that we received. So the first issue raised in the appeals is that the lot line adjustment, the proposed project, was not analyzed for consistency with applicable general plan and local coastal program policies and standards. First of all, I just want to emphasize what our standard of review for a lot line adjustment is. It's a little different than, for example, a land use permit. The standard is it has to meet all policies and standards of the general plan and zoning ordinance. For a lot line adjustment, there's a rather unique standard of review, which says that you have to look at the existing and proposed lot configuration. And if the proposed lot configuration is equal to or better than the existing configuration relative to the general plan and LCP and zoning and building ordinances, then the county may approve it. Also, in regards to this appeal issue, I just want to point out that any future development on this site would require discretionary review and approval, and at that time we would review any proposed physical development for consistency with any applicable policies and standards. I just want to give an example here of the equal to or better than standard and how we apply it to this project. One of the most classic examples of this standard is minimum parcel size, because a lot of existing lots in this county were created a long time ago and do not conform to the current minimum parcel size of our ordinance. So here's an example showing the proposed lot configuration at the Village San Simeon Point area. And you can note here that we have this isolated piece of land in the agriculture land use category. It's about 9 acres, which is well below the 320-acre minimum for ag land that's used as grazing. However, under both the existing and proposed lot configuration, it's in the same position. That's why staff is able to support this lot line adjustment, at least relative to our review of the parcel size for the equal to or better than standard. Also, on the topic of policy and ordinance consistency, I want to discuss the issue of coastal access. First of all, there's existing vertical access. So that vertical access is from the First Public Road to the shoreline. And there's the William Hurst Memorial State Beach located here where there's existing vertical access points to the shoreline. And also this land here is owned by the state, and there's an existing vertical access point, I believe, near Oak Knolls Creek. And in addition to that existing access, the conservation plan also included a deed of public access conservation easement. And I've given a copy of that easement document actually to the clerk for the board to take official notice of that. and that easement provides for various access locations in this area, including an alignment for the coastal trail, which is highlighted in yellow here, and also a series of trails on San Simeon Point. Now, our coastal zone land use ordinance requires new development between the first public road and the shoreline to provide 25 feet of dry sandy beach lateral access, so that's along the shoreline. And in this case, staff did not require the project to meet that standard because the proposed project is just a lot line adjustment. There's no physical development proposed. As such, we weren't able to establish the constitutionally required nexus or proportionality to condition the project to provide an offer of dedication for additional public access. The next main theme of the appeals relates to the environmental determination and states that our environmental determination for this project did not analyze the whole of the project as required by CEQA. In other words, the appellants are saying that this lot line adjustment brings the existing parcel boundaries into conformance with the Hearst Conservation Plan. Therefore, when we look at the whole of the project, we need to also consider the development that would be allowed by the conservation plan, including this 100-room hotel at Old San Simeon Village. And staff's response to that is that the development of that hotel at Old San Simeon Village is not allowed under the local coastal program. It would require a general plan amendment and a local coastal program amendment, not to mention, of course, the coastal development permit and other entitlements that would be required for that project. So under the existing general plan, LCP, zoning, the hotel is not allowed in that location. The other thing to point out is, although the construction of a hotel in that location would require a GPA and other amendments, what it would not require is a lot line adjustment. It would only require the general plan amendment to change the zoning and the development standards for that property, but the hotel could be developed without a lot line adjustment. Then, finally, a more specific appeal issue here states that how can the county find a project to be consistent with such an outdated local coastal program? And this is referring to the rural portion of the North Coast Area Plan, which has not been amended, I believe, since 1988. And staff's response is simply that we have a certified local coastal program, which means we can continue to issue coastal development permits as long as we have that certified LCP. With that, staff's recommending that you deny the appeals, adopt the negative declaration, and approve the project. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Are there any questions of my colleagues to Mr. Singwald or other staff? Mr. Patterson.
Yeah, just a question. Mr. Singwald, if you could put the map up of the new parcel. Let's go back. You had it. There you go. The proposed parcel one, and following that yellow line down around the bay there, and it comes out and picks up part of the point. Is that, yeah, keep on continuing
right
down. Is that part of that same parcel one as well?
No, that's a completely separate parcel. That's not a part of this adjustment.
It is not.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll open it to the appellants and the applicant. Since we are in an appeal hearing, we'll go with our standard procedure where appellants have 10 minutes, followed by the applicant for 10 minutes, open it to other public commenters, and come back with 5 minutes for the applicant, 5 minutes for the appellant. We have two different appellants. Have you worked out a coordinated presentation at this point? Do you have a sense of how you want to split that time? Or shall we just start with somebody? Seeing no one rushing to the microphone, I'll invite Ms. Hawley, if you could state your name and which appellant you're representing at this point.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Cynthia Hawley. I'm attorney for Land Watch, San Luis Obispo County. I want to point out that one of the major problems that we're facing here today was brought up in the newspaper article that the grand jury chastises county staff. The grand jury recommended that the Planning Commission require source documents when it receives reports from the Planning Department. That's one of the main problems that we're having here today. There were no source documents. LandWatch asked for the source documents for description of the development that would occur as a result of the lot line adjustment, and staff said, staff requested a copy of this plan, and the applicant's agent explained that there is no single conservation plan under one cover, but rather the plan consists of many separate recorded easements. Well, because of that, you weren't given the maps that show the underlying development that's going to occur there. But all you have to do is go to the deed of conservation easement, and anybody could get it off the internet, and it tells you that there's going to be that as well as the public review draft, that's the Hearst conservation transaction. Between the two of them, you find out that the 94 acres that is going to be, is proposed to be developed, to be created, will be taken up not only by the 100 unit inn, but with 55 acres of infrastructure and reconfiguration boundary, which means I think that they can move the 39 acre part of the main construction all around that 55 acre. But basically, it's 94 acres of development, including water, electrical distribution, sewage treatment system, distribution of pipelines, support utility infrastructure, streets, parking lots associated with an inn. And because you weren't given that information, staff keeps insisting that there is no development that's associated with this. So there is no looking at the feasibility, reasonable feasibility of development that is going to accrue because of this lot line adjustment. What's happening here is you're pretending that there's no development that's going to occur here. And you all know that there is development that's going to occur here because, for one thing, the whole Board of Supervisors has already, according to the conservation framework, endorses the Hearst Ranch plan. This is the LA Times. Supervisors endorse Hearst Ranch deal. Yet to be approved plan was endorsed ahead of time. One of the big issues that is occurring here is that due process in an administrative hearing requires that you are unbiased. Due process requires that you are a neutral body looking at the facts in the record and then making a decision based on the public health, safety, and welfare. That's your duty. And this board has already come out and said you were biased. You've said previously that you already support this project. Here's the Ranch West Side Access Comparison prepared by Bruce Gibson. And I want to put all these things into the record also. Supporters of the Hearst Ranch project. We've got Board of Supervisors. This is from the Hearst Ranch, Conserving the Hearst Ranch, Friends, HearstRanchConservation.org. Supervisor Achajian's name is here as supporting the project, and Supervisor Meacham's name is here as well as Bruce Gibson. So what LandWatch wants to point out is it's practically, for practical reasons, it's impossible for your board to make an unbiased decision here today. And we're asking that Mr. Gibson recuse himself, especially because he's been intimately involved with this. One of the things that you've pretended here, because the source document of the plan wasn't given to you, is you're being asked to pretend that that there is no piecemealing of analysis. Your staff report says the project does not involve physical development. Development is not reasonably foreseeable result. There is no foreseeable impacts, no physical development of the project. This is all not true. The project involves physical development. It involves the changing of 9 acres plus of ag land into the 94 acres of developable, the development of this project. The envelope of development within 9 acres, within that 9 acres is going to be changed after the fact, after you approve of the lot line adjustment, it's going to be changed 7.09 to commercial visitor serving, and it's going to be changed 2.08 to recreation. That was already decided ahead of time in the subdivision review board's staff report. I want to let you know that you're also pretending that the land use standards and all don't apply to this development. This is development under the Coastal Act, and it is development under your own ordinance. This is development, and it all of the standards apply to it. You're pretending that there are no foreseeable impacts to the point where you're being asked to make a formal finding that there are no foreseeable impacts, and that is not true. And the reason it's not true is because the development includes physical development. You are required by state law to look at foreseeable development. Your staff is telling you that this isn't even foreseeable. But not only is it foreseeable, it's planned. It's planned. Old San Simeon Village to Julia Morgan's vision. There's a vision for a village here that's planned, and you were not given that information in order to make your decision here today. What we would like you to do is to make a decision today to direct your staff to bring this back, to bring back the North Coast Area Plan to this board, and to begin the update process of an outdated, antiquated area plan, because if you make this decision today and approve this, legally your decision is void, because there is no planning document that has up-to-date standards, up-to-date resource designations. What your staff is asking you to do is let the Hearst Corporation decide where the resources are. They get to decide after the fact where the resources are. I'm going to put all of this into the administrative record. I'm going to ask you to not take this action today, to begin the update process, and I would ask the Bruce Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, to recuse himself if there is some kind of an action that's taken here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hawley. I have a question for you, but let me go ahead with Mr. Christie speaking for the other appellant.
Thank you, Chairman Gibson. Honorable Supervisors, I'm Andrew Christie. I'm Director of the Santa Lucia Chapter of the Sierra Club. The grounds for our appeal are very simple. I'll just read the sentence from the February 2nd, 2009 staff report to the Subdivision Review Board, which states that the proposed lot configuration would be equal to or better than the existing configuration because it would bring the existing lot boundaries into conformance with the boundaries of the various easements established by the Hearst Conservation Plan. The conservation plan forwards the goals and policies of the general plan, etc. And certainly that would be very nice and convenient if, in fact, the Hearst Ranch Conservation Plan does advance the goals and policies of the general plan, but the Hearst Ranch Conservation Plan is not the general plan, nor is it the local coastal plan. And I will read from the California Coastal Commission's 2004 draft evaluation of Hearst Ranch Conservation Plan, dated August 10, 2004. Quote, the HRCP is not an alternative to normal regulatory review of the development and land uses set forth in the HRCP, nor does it create any entitlements to regulatory approval of the development and land uses anticipated in the HRCP, end quote. We agree, and for that reason, we urge you to deny this request and instruct the appellants that they have to come back to apply for an LCP amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christie. With that, we'll consider the appellants. And Ms. Hawley, I had a question for you. First of all, I'm not going to recuse myself from this decision. And Mr. Christie actually spoke directly to a point. The Hearst Ranch Conservation Plan was a private transaction between a private landowner and public funding entities. It has nothing to do with the lot line adjustment, nothing to do with any subsequent development that they may apply for. But you made a statement that you, and I have no financial interest in anything to do with the Hearst Ranch or any of the other entities that might be involved. So there's no grounds for my recusal. But you made a statement that that this item before us today, this lot line adjustment, constitutes development under our Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance. And I wonder if you had a citation of our CZLUO that would support that?
Well, I've got the Coastal Act, and your CZLUO is pretty much the same as that.
Well, you had stated that our CZLUO qualified this as development.
Yeah, it does.
And
I don't have
citation?
That section. I'm sure your staff can give it to you, but it's pretty much the same as the state law. Plus, there's a case, Lafay Inc. v. County of Los Angeles, 1999, that establishes conclusively that a lot line adjustment constitutes development under the Coastal Act.
All right. Thank you. That's what I need to know. Mr. Patterson, you
have
a question?
Yeah, I was curious about that same issue, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Hawley, if you might stay there just for clarification, because I don't know if I have your quote right. You said that the state requires that we evaluate potential development.
Yes, it does.
And I wanted to ask County Council to opine on that. And
Jim Orton from the County Council's office. In answer to the question of whether a lot line adjustment is development under the Coastal Act and under our certified program, in Section 2101010 Subdivision D of our Real Property Division Ordinance, it indicates that a lot line adjustment approval shall constitute approval of a coastal development permit. It's equivalent to. So it is development under the Coastal Act as that term is used in the Coastal Act. However, I think the development that staff has been talking about is physical development on the property of a project. And as staff indicated, there's no need for this lot line adjustment to take place for that development to occur. And there would further need to be a subsequent amendment to the plan. So I think staff is taking the position that this lot line adjustment is not put you in a situation where you're bound to the first step of future development on the property. You're not locked into that if you approve this adjustment. Do you have any other questions on that?
I don't.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Orton? Thank you, Ms. Hawley. Mr. Lyon, are you speaking for the applicant here?
Yes, my name is Roger Lyon, and I represent the applicant on this project. And I speak in support of the staff recommendation. I think that they've done an excellent job of analyzing the issues as far as the compliance of this application with the LCP and county ordinance. And I think that they accurately characterized and reflected the lot line adjustment. And I think that there are some differences in the court cases as to whether or not this would be considered development under the Coastal Act, Lafay case, and then there's another case that is takes a contrary position. But for the sake, we're here today assuming that it is development. A lot line adjustment has a very narrow scope of review and a very narrow standard as far as approval. Is a lot configuration equal to or better than the of the new parcels, equal to or better than the existing configuration? And I think that your staff has gone through point by point all of the issues in your LCP as far as general plan conformance as to the lot configuration is equal to or better in the new configuration as opposed to the old. And that's all that you have before you in this. The staff correctly points out that the development could go forward under the Hearst Conservation Plan if it had the zoning and the LCP, which it does not have. But assuming that it did have it, it could go forward in the existing lot configuration. It could go forward in the new configuration. So really, it's not relevant as far as this demanded analysis of what is very speculative as far as what the future development will be on the property. Staff correctly pointed out that in order to do the Julia Morgan 100-room inn at Old San Simeon Village, which is a retained right in the private conservation agreement, that there would have to be an LCP amendment, because in the commercial retail zone at Old San Simeon Village, hotel rooms are prohibited. So there, what you have before you is a very simple application. You've got a scale. You've got a four-way lot line adjustment. You're going to end up, at the end of this application, you've got 33,000 acres, which is in four legal saleable parcels today. And after this is approved, you're going to have a slightly different configuration, actually increasing the minimum lot size of the smallest two lots to larger parcels, making them a better configuration. You're going to have four legal saleable parcels, and that's where we are. This is housekeeping as far as the applicant. I mean, the application, we were requested to put the reason where we were candid. This is to start bringing the lot configuration in conformance with this private agreement. It doesn't bring it, you know, change the zoning or anything like that. But we're starting that process. We're very candid about that. As far as having this lot configuration. An example of what that does is, for example, the headquarters parcel, 1,500 acre piece of property, which cannot be nothing can be separately conveyed under the private conservation agreement without adjusting these boundaries. That legitimizes and makes that possible. I'm prepared. I don't think I need to. I think most of the board members are familiar with it. I can go through and give an overview of the overall Hearst Conservation Plan. We're very proud of that, and we think that it was a historic accomplishment for this county and for the state of California. It resulted in a 10-to-1 reduction in the density of existing parcels on the ranch. It is eliminating the major resort development out on San Simeon Point. It resulted in 13 miles of California coastline going into public ownership with the attendant public access rights, public access easements that will allow an 18-mile coastal trail. And it's a very good, I think, accomplishment, and proud of the fact that this board unanimously recommended approval of it. SLOCOG recommended approval of it. There were busloads, literally busloads, of people from this community that went up to Sacramento and Santa Rosa to support it. And this is, again, one step as far as implementing that plan. I'm available to answer questions, but I would urge you to support the staff recommendation to approve this.
Thank you, Mr. Lyon. Any questions of Mr. Lyon from colleagues? There was, seems to me, a point of confusion. The appellants keep referring to the development plan of the Hearst Ranch Conservation Project, but you referred to the development as a retained right, and I wonder if you could clarify that in terms of the conservation easements. Are those proposals for development, or are those...
They're limitations, basically. The conservation easement, in perpetuity, sets the limits of whatever could be requested, and it eliminates, most importantly, it eliminates the ability ever to ask for anything other than what's in that easement. So in other words, while we have zoning that allows a 250-room resort hotel on an 18-hole golf course on San Simeon Point, the private agreement prohibits that.
And so in
as terms far as the Julie Morgan 100-room inn at Old San Simeon Village, all the easement does is say we're not precluded from ever asking a regulatory agency for permission to do that. But it in no way grants that permission.
Have you made application?
And I can't do that.
Have you made application for that?
No applications have been submitted, prepared, or
no development applications are part of this.
No.
Are part of this proposal.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of of Mr. Lyon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll come back with 5 minutes after we do hear. We have one request to speak from the public. We'll open it to the public. Mahala Burton for 3 minutes.
Mahala Burton, Cambria. Good afternoon. 30 years ago, I applied for a lot line adjustment in this county, and I was required to dot every I on the application and provide maps showing all easements and structures. I was not given any preferential treatment to make an incomplete document, and so that's one statement. The staff report states that the only purpose of the lot line adjustment is cleanup of the easement, but in reality, the proposed lot line adjustment of four parcels is the first step in the plan to develop Old San Simeon Village in the vision of the Julia Child Morgan drawings. And this is stated throughout the easement documents. And it isn't just development in the village. It's that whole big parcel of 93 acres, which are going to be employee housing and all kinds of other development going along with that. All of the warehouses can be redone. There's a tremendous amount. Getting to that issue of access, there's vertical access at where the staff stated at William Randolph Hertz State Beach, but to get to the point, you have to cross Hearst land, and there's no lateral access, and that's on a permissive use statute. The only other way to get legally to the point is to go 2 miles north to Oak Knoll, where the state owns, and walk down to the beach, and then if there's low tide, you can make it up to the point, but there is really no access given by Hearst in perpetuity. The real thing, and I don't have a whole lot of time I want to get to, is the conflict of duty. And I don't mean conflict of interest under Government Code 87200. Supervisors acting on the public's behalf have an obligation to be free from conflicts of duty that could adversely influence their judgment, objectivity, or loyalty to the public. I'm addressing this to Chairman Gibson. Now, I think you're an admirable person. I voted for you, and I donated to your campaign. But when it comes to Hearst, I think that you have to recuse yourself. You are too intimately involved. You have a website that is so complicated, and it is the to-go place for all of the documents. Every single document ever created is on that site, and there is no other place to find it. Staff directed the public to go to the state government agency to look at the easement. There are no maps there. Everything is on your site. This is on your site. An analysis of everything. This is on your site. You are so tied up with this that you cannot be objective. Appellant Andrew Christie of the Sierra Club read a little bit of this letter from Peter Douglas written back in 2004. Criticizing, and his, in a way, criticizing the easement, because
thank
not
you.
Everybody in California thought it was such a great deal.
Right,
you responded to that easement.
Thank you, Ms. Burton. I'm afraid your 3 minutes is up.
Okay, I ask you to recuse
you.
Yourself or have a continuation
thank
until the
that, Ms.
lawyer
Burton, your time,
can
your time's
investigate
up. Thank
this.
You. Thank you. Seeing no other requests from the general public and no one coming forward, we'll close it to the public. Come back for 5 minutes, starting with the applicant, if there's anything you'd like to add. No, Mr. Lyon, and 5 minutes for the appellant, Ms. Hawley.
First, I want to comment on something that Supervisor Patterson asked about state law in relation to looking at foreseeable development, and what that state law is California Environmental Quality Act. California Environmental Quality Act requires for all development to have an analysis of foreseeable, all foreseeable, reasonably foreseeable development. And since a lot line adjustment is development under the Coastal Act, does require all of the analysis that all other physical development requires, and does require CEQA analysis, there is not only foreseeable development, reasonably foreseeable, there is planned development to this. So your analysis for the adoption or approval of the development itself is lacking, and also your analysis for CEQA is lacking, because there's no recognition in your CEQA papers that the project of the lot line adjustment involves any development at all, and that's sorely lacking. What's happening here is, and it's because there's no legal updated area plan that has your current standards on it. The county's idea of the county's determination of where the wetlands are, where the creeks are, what kind of endangered species live there. What's happening here is a privatization of land use planning, basically. And the Hearst Corporation is the ones that are describing what should occur there. Their easement describes what should occur there. They're giving it to you. And before it even came to you, this board approved it. So rather than you deciding what land uses will occur, and I would just like to read you very quickly. What the law requires, and that is in the general plan law, land use element designates the distribution and general location and extent of land uses. The location and designation of land uses for public and private uses shall be identified. You're supposed to identify them, not the Hearst Corporation. You are supposed to identify the natural resources and make a statement of the standards of population density, of building intensity recommended for the various districts. You're supposed to do that, not the Hearst Corporation. So this is just backwards. The Hearst Corporation is doing land use planning. The Hearst Corporation is deciding what resources are there. And basically what you're doing, because you have already decided that you support this project, is that you and the Hearst Corporation are cooperating to violate both state and local law here. And you, instead of becoming the authorities and doing your duty to provide this community and the state with an updated area plan, you're turning into the Hearst Corporation go-to guys. And what we're asking is that you take your authority, do your duty, and protect the public health, safety, and welfare, protect the state's interest in this coastal area that just is it's a crown jewel in California's coast. And if you haven't been there, I suggest that you go there, because what you're proposing to do is urbanize one of the last clean places. There is no pollution in the water, and there's clean air. There are species that live in the creek. There's a little creek that flows through there into the cove. And what you're proposing to do, what your staff is asking you to do, is to ignore your duty and to just do what the Hearst Corporation wants you to do. In violation of CEQA, in violation of the Coastal Act, in violation of general plan law. And again, this is, and staff, I didn't realize that it would be a good idea for staff to show you this picture of what is allowable at San Simeon Point. It's not the Hearst Corporation's duty to say, well, we'll never build there, even though an easement is not in perpetuity and can be violated in the future. They're saying, look at how bad your plan is. We're going to fix it for you. What we want you to do is fix it. This is your duty to fix, to take this away, make this, protect this area from the 250-room hotel, the parking lots, the convention center. This is outdated. This was written in 1980, approved in 1984, and certified by the Coastal Commission in 1988. We ask you to do your duty and to deny this project.
Thank you, Ms. Hawley. Any colleagues have questions of Ms. Hawley? Yes, Mr. Hill.
Ms. Hawley, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get to one of the points that you came back to a few times on the negative declaration. If you could be specific and concise, how is it that you see this lot line adjustment causing a direct change in the environment, which is one of the claims that you're making on the appeal?
CEQA requires that if there is any even indirect changes in the environment, if there are any reasonably foreseeable impacts caused by the project that you're looking at, that you have to include it in the whole project. And if when you don't include it in the project, it's called piecemealing. And what your staff is describing is just exactly what piecemealing is. They're saying, well, we'll just look at the lot line adjustment now, and yes, it's going to require an amendment of your local coastal program, but we'll do that then. And when we do that, we'll look at the development. CEQA requires you to look at the development now because it's all one piece of cloth.
What development are you referring to specifically?
The development that will occur within the envelope of the 94 acres that the Hearst Corporation has planned. You see, it's not just, it is foreseeable, but it's not just foreseeable, it's planned. This lot line adjustment is occurring to accommodate, and it says it right in your staff report, to accommodate the Hearst Corporation's plans. And the Hearst Corporation plans to develop that with a hotel, parking lots, sewage treatment plant. Certainly, your board would want to control where a sewage treatment plant goes, and right next to the coast in on a state park beach.
Thank you.
Let me follow up before I go to Supervisor Ashad. Did you have a
question?
Let me follow up. Supervisor Hill asked whether you identified any direct environmental impact with this lot line. Do you identify any direct environmental impact by changing the parcel boundaries?
The planned development is, no, direct? No, it's just
okay.
Lines on
That's
paper.
All. That's what I want to know.
It's just lines
okay.
on paper,
it's
but
just,
there
it is
indirect,
it is
and
just
CEQA requires
okay.
that you
thank
analyze
you.
Indirect, foreseeably indirect
okay, thank you.
As well.
I, that's the answer I needed. Mr. Shajan, you had questions?
Mine
staff?
For staff.
That's fine. No other questions from Ms. Holly. We'll go to staff.
Would you please put one of those slides up where it shows the subdivided parcels right there? If this wasn't in front of us as is, are we saying that in the future, if they care to develop, it will be developed under the ownership of one person rather than maybe four parcels that could be sold to four different ownerships?
Yeah, that's correct. That would be a difference, is these become separate sellable lots. So that would be the only difference.
As far as future development goes, it has no impact if it's developed under one person or four different people. So as far as the environmentally having an impact, negative or positive, on the existing property with its certificate of compliances with its development rights, it is what it is, except that it's in four different parcels rather than one parcel, without increasing the number of structures that can be developed on these properties.
Correct, and that's based, again, on what's allowed under our current local coastal program that's very specific about how this site should be developed. So,
ask another question. Regardless what happens here, under one ownership or four different ownerships, if it was to develop in the future, it still has to go through the process where Planning Commission, Board of Supervisors, Coastal Commission, they'll all have a say as how it gets developed. If there was to be a sewer plant, where and how it will be in place. Am I correct in saying that? It's not up to the owners to say, this is what we want, this is how we're going to do it, and it's a done deal. It still has to go through the process and be addressed as what the process, or you folks are here for, staff, as the front of the line to pinpoint and raise the red flags or whatever it takes for you to move something forward, if it's movable, going through the process and be sure that all the I's and T's are dotted and prior it's getting
that,
any place.
Yes, that's correct. Not only would any future development on this site require discretionary approval from the county coastal development permit and other entitlements, but also that could occur under the existing parcel configuration.
That was my first question. So regardless what the future holds here, it's still, it is what it is under one ownership or four different ownerships.
Correct.
Still has to go through the same process without it having a negative impact on the environment and its sensitivity that exists in this pristine area.
Correct.
Thank you. Let me jump in here, because there are a number of assertions made by the appellants that I'd like to get clarified. Do we have a legal local coastal program in place right now?
Yes, we have a certified LCP.
We have a certified LCP, and that LCP specifies land use categories as you determined here.
Yes.
And does this proposal before us change any of those land use categories in any way?
No, that would require a general plan amendment, no.
Okay, so so I appreciate Supervisor Sajjan's pointing out, and it's because we can consider contiguous parcels as a single site that it's really the land use categories as and the standards in our LCP that control what can or can't be done from the county's level in terms of development on a particular site.
Correct.
And as I understand it, any easements that a private property owner may have entered into are above and beyond and outside of the consideration of the county's land use permitting process.
Exactly.
So any restrictions that are placed on that, and I guess I would turn to attorneys, any restrictions that are placed on easements are between the easement holder and the grantor of the easement and the public agencies that administer these sorts of things.
I think the applicant described that in his testimony. You have the responsibility under the land use plan to discover, cover the uses that can go there. I also wanted to emphasize that part of the local certified program is the criteria to be used in approving lot line adjustments that equal to or better than criteria.
Right. So summarizing the environmental impacts of this, Ms. Hawley admitted there's no direct environmental impact by it's just lines on a map. And in terms of the current situation, the lines on the map don't really affect what can and can't be done there. It's the land use categories and the LCP. So there's no indirect effect of changing the lines on the map. And that's what I read in your staff report.
Exactly.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. Mr. Patterson?
Yeah, and you actually asked the question, but I just, for clarity, again, Mr. Singlewald, the acreages of the various land use categories or the zoning, if you will, that hasn't changed. That would require a general plan amendment to do that. Is just for point of clarification.
That is correct. Let me add one other point of clarification that the appellants did correctly point out that the subdivision review board staff report actually reflected a mapping error that we had, which showed this piece of land in ag actually in commercial retail, which was incorrect, and that's been corrected. And going back to your specific question, a lot line adjustment cannot change a land use category, and that's not what's being proposed at all.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions of staff?
Just a historical question. Were there building envelopes already signed to this large piece of property at one time or another? Was there any such thing?
There was figure 4-2 of the North Coast Area Plan, which shows general locations for where the buildings should occur on San Simeon Point.
Does this change any of that?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'll just lead toward the motion here. I think the appellants have brought forward some assertions here that perpetuate a bit of confusion that goes back a long way with this project, and that is that the conservation program they read as a development proposal, when in fact it is the private negotiation that was publicly funded to restrict what the particular property owner could do on this piece of property. And again, whereas I certainly was active in supporting the conservation proposal, that in no way speaks to any of the development proposals that might come forward, where I will analyze that based on the evidence in the record and the environmental analysis that staff has prepared. And as I read through here, I believe in our staff report, as I read through the staff report, staff has very well responded to each and every appeal point. in terms of the information provided in this in this appeal, and has, I think, answered every question and successfully defend the action of the Subdivision Review Board. So with that, I will move, well, Madam Clerk asks one good question before I make the motion. We offered 5 minutes at the end for the appellant to respond. Ms. Hawley took most but not all of that. I didn't know if Mr. Christie, on behalf of the other appellant, had anything to add. Seeing that he does not, thank you, Madam Clerk. We'll close it, and I will move staff's recommendation to deny the appeal.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion on the motion?
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair. I support the motion as well. You know, to me, it came down to whether this did, as the surgeons claimed, facilitated development by approving this, and I wasn't convinced of that by testimony today or by the written appeal either, so that's why I'm supporting it.
Okay. Thank you. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, maybe you should also have a motion to bring into the record the materials submitted by staff and Ms. Hawley.
So moved.
Second.
That on a voice vote. All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, none. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. With that, we then come to closed session. I don't have any requests to speak on closed session. Seeing none, we'll close to the public and ask for Mr. Jensen's prognostication.
I'm guessing about 90 minutes.
Okay, thank you, sir. We will reconvene at 1:30.
So we're going to jump into closed session right away?
Yeah, I'm ready. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We'll bring to order the afternoon session and start with report out of closed session. Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken. However, the board is going to reconvene in closed session at 4 o'clock, so there may be a subsequent, there will be a subsequent report after that session.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I see Mr. Keith in the front row. Could you check the staff table to see if there are mics on? We're getting a funny bit of echo. Is it coming out of the back room? We'll just make sure that we're mics off on the staff table. Thank you, sir. Brings us to our afternoon session of general public comment items not on the agenda. I have a number of requests to speak. I'm going to close acceptance of requests to speak in general public comment and go with who we have. We'll start with Dr. C. Height and followed by Gwen Taylor.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos, you swore to uphold the Constitution. How are you going to repair the damage caused by an abuse of power at the highest level? The attitude of disrespect begins at the top and it filters down all the way to the police, and that is a quote from Protection and Advocacy, Inc. The opportunity has passed to turn to your administrator and council and adopt a policy of zero tolerance for scandal, to review the updates on the ADA and the Andrew Civil Rights Act. I am 58 years old, and it could be argued that I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, to exercise my rights through an administrative complaint process. Likewise, it could be argued that the people of Los Osos, the demographic of senior and disabled citizens on fixed incomes, weren't smart enough, weren't pretty enough to get a fair shake, to get the attention of the county, to have equal opportunity, upward mobility that this county reserves for the young and the sexy. Well, how much is this going to cost you to restore equity? Because at $300 an hour for attorney fees, that's 300 cans of tuna or 300 cans of beans. And you're in the really unique position now of trying to blame the rape victim for wearing a skirt too short, or you're in the unique position, considering what's being printed in the paper, of really taking the breast out of the mouths of newborn infants, weaning newborn infants to the bottle in this county. I ask you to not balance your budget on the backs of the poor or the rich like Phoebe Hearst Cook. How can you justify equity, which the state and the federal government requires of you, when the two people in charge of equity didn't believe in it, didn't practice it? How are you going to restore respect? Well, it's my opinion that the speakers of Los Osos are not going about their daily life activities, and then they're not protecting their rights, and that's a county statement. You could become dependent adults like Phoebe Hearst Cook. You could become dependent. You could have no rights. We 4th of July came and went. There's really interesting things in the paper. I'm assuming you read the paper. And independence is described as freedom from interference. And the county should never put itself in a position of being paternal, of creating a dependence, not giving us equal information and equal choices, and then having us dependent upon you. This is just the wrong thing to do. So, I'm really concerned. The press wouldn't be printing things if they were going to be sued for slander. I'm very concerned.
Thank you, Dr. Height. Ms. Taylor, followed by David Dugan.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. We have waited for a very long time to hear a determination by Warren Jensen on the documentation of assertions that Ms. Shaker brought to the county. I would hope that today would be the day that we hear what he has to say about the documentation that she presented to this board, since we have been here for several Tuesdays expecting it, but always being told it was going to be postponed. That having been said, I would also ask that an answer be given as to why a city such as Paso Robles can implement an urgency ordinance on water conservation, and it is a case of public health, safety, and welfare. We in Los Osos have a problem of saltwater intrusion, and we need to have someone take care of our problem, and you are the someone because you have jurisdiction over our situation. Please address this in some manner so that we are aware of where our, shall we call it, abilities are to slow down the saltwater intrusion, and whether the county has any jurisdiction to put any implementation in on an emergency basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Dugan, followed by Al Barrow.
David Los Osos, brownout violations. Recently, I talked about how this board violated brownout because they had information that should have been presented to the public on a certain issue, and it never was presented to the public except by me. But once you were aware of that, I think it was your responsibility to voice that information and not sit there and say nothing. On more than one occasion, I think that's happened in a lot of issues, not just concerning Los Osos, but other issues. And I've been keeping an eye and watching videos and listening to what's being said or what's not being said. And the act of withholding information from the public because you want to decide what you want them to hear, what they should hear or should not hear, is a violation of the Brown Act. I make you very keenly aware of that. And there are remedies for that, specifically legal remedies, that in the end can be criminal misdemeanors. And we want to take it that far, but I think if somebody like myself or others can bring to you actual information that the public should know, and that me just coming up here and saying, well, this is what I know that the public should know, I think you should seriously look at this just to make sure that you are not in violation of the Brown Act and that you haven't made that decision to make sure that the people should or should not know, so your issue can pass, so the thing that you are backing will get a full vote, whether it's an assessment or a vote of the board, because without people having that information, they can't contact you and say, hey, I found this out, or I heard this at the board meeting. Why aren't you speaking towards this? They can't come to you and say, give their opinion, or email you, or call you on the phone. And therefore, they're left out of the loop. They're a violation of the Brown Act. So, take care, and I would like to thank people on the board who really do consider, when they have told something that is a violation of the Brown Act, for them to try to remedy that problem and to never compromise your convictions. Never vote for unity of the board. Stand by your convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Mr. Barrow, followed by Gail McPherson.
Good afternoon, members of the board and public. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and I wanted to talk today about the impacts of the financial recession on families and schools. As you know, we are in a U-shaped recovery, which we haven't quite hit the bottom yet, and we may not have a V-shaped recovery, so we may have a long period of underemployment. Cal Poly has announced to many of their professors that they will work harder for less pay. Okay, that's just one example. Regarding families that have homes, they're upside down, many of them. They bought recently. Others have lost 25% of their family value, their worth, because most of the home values are what they have for assets. That's a difficult situation. Credit is very tight. A lot of businesses cannot even get credit, even if they have good borrowing records and the rest of it. So we are now faced in an environment where families have to scrimp and deny themselves things that they would normally have. Maybe a healthy diet, their share of cost increases on their medical, so they short themselves a little bit on medical. They don't go on vacations, they go camping or something. All these kinds of things have an impact on the social life of the family. And I think we need to stop and think a little bit about the impacts the government is having on those families as well. Because the family is a basic unit of civilization. And here in America, we believe the family is very important. And I think in my talks, I've kind of neglected that because I talk about seniors, low-income people, and stuff like that. But if we are going to impact families more than they're already impacted, this is going to cause them severe pain. And I think we should be aware that anything we do as a local government should be considered as to the impact it will have on our citizens, most of whom are working. Most households in 2000 have two jobs, and both of those are getting cut back. In the 1970s, households only had one job. So with shrinking job market, with shrinking income, with shrinking assets from home and pensions, we are in a lot of trouble. I think it's really time that we take a serious look at the conditions of the people that you are going to be taxing here in the next few years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Ms. McPherson, followed by Maria Kelly.
Good afternoon, Honorable Board, Supervisors, Chairman. I wanted to bring to your attention, I think I did a few months ago, that there is a water board opening, a vacancy, for a county supervisors to fill. And it could be Santa Barbara. I mean, they have many counties, but this county is a pretty large and affected county. And so I was just going to urge you again to go to the website and sign up if you haven't already done so. I think it would be a real benefit to the people of the county to have one of you fine gentlemen sitting on that that board. With that said, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the ongoing lawsuit that was filed by the parties that received enforcement action. That final petition has been filed. We expect to have a trial sometime in fall or early winter. The parties are simply asking that the enforcement orders be lifted, that it be vacated, and that they believe that there were procedural issues, due process issues, and many others. If you'd like more information, I'd like to send that to you because I think it does affect all of the people in the county. As you know, there's been some on-site regulations that were amended recently, and they're waiting in Sacramento for final approval. We as a group are standing against that, saying that that's really premature with AB 885 still waiting in the wings. And we also believe that Los Osos is a test case for many other individual enforcement actions. Enforcement is usually against, no, I won't even say usually, it's always against agencies and industries that fail to do their job to prevent pollution. In this case, a handful, 14 individuals, have cease and desist orders. And they're standing there by themselves carrying the weight for the entire community. And I would, I'm glad that you attempted to inform the board and ask them to lift this after the passage of the 218 vote. I think it was appropriate at that point for them to lift it and to show a goodwill gesture, because they did screw up the whole process and it was experimental in nature. So at this point, I would ask that you still stand with the people of that are under enforcement, as well as the rest of the people in the county that have septic systems that may be affected, and it may cost them quite a bit to comply with any new regulations. And I hope to see your name in that vacancy block on that that board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McPherson. Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond?
Certainly, Mr. Meacham.
I'm going to respond real quickly to your request. I did seek that opportunity last year. There is a rule or a law in there that pretty much precludes most of us from doing this. It says that if your income is more than 10% from a source that has a wastewater discharge permit, you're precluded from sitting on the board. I gave up everything else I was doing, and this job is my income.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, and I would assume that most of the board can't either. That 10% rule has created a lot of problems, and I talked to the attorney from the state, mm-hmm. and he said they're trying to find a way to address
exactly.
that issue, but as yet they have not come up with a way to do it.
Yeah, there is a draft in place in Sacramento to try to change that.
Right.
And in my case, since I already serve on a statewide coastal commission,
yeah.
It's jeopardy if you try to get another one. It's your only...
Well, they meet different weeks, though.
Yeah,
you could do Coastal Commission 1 week and the board the other.
I would suggest, Bruce, you might be the perfect person for this.
Well, I think you're going to find the same situation applies to me. So, Ms. Kelly, followed by Richard Margetson.
Maria Kelly from Los Osos. I'm here today on behalf of the Los Osos Grassroots Dems and the El Morro Action Committee of Morro Bay. I'm reading a press release that I received. The Los Osos Grassroots Democrats invite everyone to a free, open community discussion of health care and you. Panelists include Walter Heath of Health Care for All, Dr. David Pools, MD physician, and Paul Malacomp, businessman. The panel will field health care questions and topics such as why health care reform now, current state of health care reform, proposals and solutions now being presented and debated. This is a forum that is advocating for the single-payer health care plan, and it will be an open discussion as to why the Los Osos Grassroots Dems think that it's the best health care solution. It's an ongoing to continue the discussion. It's obviously a hot-button topic. There's not a lot of agreement necessarily on the single-payer health care plan, but this is an opportunity to come, whether you have an opinion, an alternate opinion, or no opinion. It will be a very informative forum. It's going to be Sunday, July 26th from 2 to 4 at the South Bay Community Center, 2180 Palisades Avenue, Los Osos. Refreshments will be served. Donations will be appreciated. This is the first, hopefully, of many, the first Margaret Marion Progressive Forum, and it's in honor of her and her incredible grassroots efforts, not only in Los Osos, but far-flung and wide. She showed us how to make grassroots work and make government work for the people, and it is in her honor, and we will continue to do this. And the LOGR Dems are very committed to reform and not just Band-Aid politics, but we like to see real reform. If you have any questions, please call Jeanette Davis, 528-6994, and I hope to see people there. Again, divergent opinions welcome. These are very knowledgeable people who have a lot of passion for this topic, and they will have a lot of information. So we encourage whoever from the county would like to come far and wide to please come join us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Mr. Margetson, followed by Leon Golden.
Richard Margetson. On June 23rd, I was not able to be here, but you had an agenda item dealing with the Homeless Services Oversight Council.
Jerry Walsh came and tried to voice some of my concerns. I would like to follow up on that today. I think the problem that we have with, we came before you months before that and we endorsed the 10-year plan. We have no problem with the 10-year plan. The concepts in there are valid. It would be nice if we could attain all of them. It would be nice if we could fund all of them. Where I think things came off the tracks were the transition team was meeting on a regular basis. As we got closer to coming before you on June 23rd, the transition team stopped meeting. We were meeting almost sometimes 2-3 times a month. For about a 2-month period before that item came before you, we didn't meet anymore. And towards the end, it was basically, there were basically 4 people in the room. Dana Lilly, Amy Gilman, myself, and Dee Torres. We never saw, and the advisory council, Jim Duno's on that, Jerry Walsh is on that, the Homeless Advisory Council, we never saw the list and the donors that were coming forward or were asked to come forward and contribute to this. Because when we went around to every city with the 10-year plan, one of the basic comments that was made at every meeting, Paul Brown got up at most of the meetings and says, we are not here to ask you for money. And during those times when the transition team was meeting, our understanding was that there were funds from the county that were going to get this started. Now $2,500 is coming from Community Action Partnership. We held a rummage sale with the proceeds to go towards matching funds for the Christmas event. People worked for 2.5 weeks accumulating stuff, pricing it, and manning the sale that day. We made $2,900. It's very hard to take away from funds that are scarce now and a half-time position. What do you think a half-time position is going to accomplish? A majority of that time is going to be used just staffing the council meetings, getting packets ready, getting information ready, running those meetings. And then another requirement is to raise the funds. This has to be a serious discussion when it comes back, because the frontline providers are not happy with how this is proceeding.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Mr. Golden, followed by Lindy Owen.
I come here before you because we've seen this, what I'm about to talk about, happen many, many occasions where the table in front of me here is full of staff people, where a staff report is purportedly handed to you, which is basically the repeat of last time's staff report, including language that's identical to what was in last time's staff report. And it seems to me that you would want to have, for example, I'm going to use as an example the Los Osos update. You'd want to have that update in writing so you could take a look at it, give some thought and consideration to it, instead of having what amounts to, at least according to today's agenda.
Mr. Golden, are you speaking to the sewer item next?
No, I'm not.
Okay, if you'd continue then on general public comment, please.
I'm not going to mention the sewer. You did.
Carry on.
I hope you didn't take the time away from me. In any case, we have a situation where the funds of the county are being used, and it would seem to me you'd be, to get back on my point, that you would be better served to have a written report which tells you what happened during the last month, or if this is a project which was 2 months in doing, that you could look at, that the folks who come here and are interested in could look at and could prepare to help you. Because there's a lot of help out in this community. I've listened carefully to the people who've come here who have had a lot of experience that you couldn't afford to buy, who come and try to give you the benefit of their experience. Now, this takes away also from the time that you have to allow people to come and talk on the subject. You know, the Brown Act, and I want to just end by telling you that the Brown Act came out of secret government. And when you look at things, the demands of the Brown Act, and you think that you need to cut back because it's interfering in your deliberations, you're making a terrible mistake. And you're also going against the whole reason the Brown Act is there. The Brown Act is there so that people can come and help you with their opinions. Now, you may find that may not be helpful, but nevertheless, you have got to allow those times. And this spending all the time with staff sitting here and running up a bill instead of giving you a written report that you can then prepare yourself to deal with the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Golden.
You're quite welcome.
Ms. Owen, my last request to speak.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I wanted to just note, in case nobody had heard, our national deficit is at $1 trillion now. And I wanted to speak about public waste, and basically the $250,000 that was spent on the vector control issue, how could that have been avoided and done correctly? That's what you need to ask yourselves, because that's $250,000 that's gone. And yes, a few people were employed over it, but that's not where we want to see the savings go. $30,000 to date on administrative leave for three employees who are being looked at as far as supposed misconduct with the county. Can you speed that process up so that something is done with them? It looks obvious from what I've seen that they all three have pretty serious reasons for being fired. But instead, we'll spend money letting them have these paid vacations while, you know, legal counsel mulls over the stuff. I just wanted to come back down to the fact that, in Los Osos, we have the Santa Ynez traffic calming project. That cost $1 million, and we got a pretty pathetic project. If anybody ever drives out to look at it, you would be shocked at how far $1 million went. Being misspent and misappropriated and not being looked at carefully through three sets of eyes if necessary. The public is here to help you, and I think there are many committees that would like to be involved in when these things are questionable. Let the public be involved. And then lastly, if the formal complaint for bid rigging comes out against Pava Ogren and his activities with Montgomery Watson Harza, Carollo, Lou Corella, et cetera, I don't know what that's going to do to the $7 million that's been spent on a project that's already just totally rejected by most agencies. So that's how the money's being spent, and I, as a taxpayer and a community activist, am begging you to just try to tighten things up, be more careful, stop laying off staff, take the cuts where it needs, and just stop this public waste. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That concludes our afternoon public comment session, items not on the agenda. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce our item, please.
Item D1 is the update on the Los Osos Wastewater Treatment Project. A, accept the monthly project update from county staff. B, receive public comment on issues related to the Los Osos Wastewater Project.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Waddell.
Thank you, Chairman Gibson, members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. I do have a brief update for you today. I'm also going to have Trevor Keith from the Planning Department provide some information on developments on the Habitat Conservation Plan related to Los Osos. If the clerk could put the PowerPoint up. So getting started here, just a quick update on the Planning Commission hearings. The project is before the Planning Commission for approval of the Environmental Impact Report and the Coastal Permit. The hearings have been continued. The next date is July 23rd. That's a Thursday. There's other items on the agenda. Los Osos is expected to be on in the afternoon. And then there's a special meeting scheduled for Friday, July 24th, and that would be a full day for Los Osos. It's important to note that no final actions have been taken by the Planning Commission to date. There's speculation on the outcomes and rumors based on their discussions and straw votes, but they have made no final decisions, and they are still in their process. Our design-build contracting efforts, the time before the Planning Commission has had an impact on the design-build process. As you know, a short list of design-build teams was established in April of this year. We had two packages, one for the collection system, one for the treatment facility. There were no appeals on the collection system, and so that short list is final. There is one pending appeal that is still going through the process on the treatment facility, so the short list is in fact not final, but is still tentative. The next step then would be the release of the request for proposals, and based on prior direction, the project team was focusing on the request for the RFP for the collection system. However, since the end of April, when the Planning Commission hearings were continued, those efforts have been on hold. The timing, though, for going to construction is the timing is still good because the final proposals and contracts for the project need to be coordinated with the issuance of the final permits, especially the coastal development permit, which is expected to take several months after any Planning Commission actions. And so, therefore, there is time in there to go through the RFP process after Planning Commission actions. I should note that also that the project budget, consistent with what we had said previously, we've basically allocated all the project budget or spent it through the end of this fiscal year of June 30th. There is approximately $250,000 remaining of funding, but this has all been allocated to consultant contracts. But all essential work on the project is on hold right now as we go through the Planning Commission hearings. There's no efforts going on related to working on the RFPs or on the facilities plan. Basically, only essential efforts needed to be responsive to the Coastal Commission are what's going on. And we're also then evaluating existing contracts and looking at opportunities to reduce their scope for work that is not needed at this time to then allow some of that remaining $250,000 to be reallocated to some of our immediate needs as we go through the Planning Commission. On a more positive financial update, with U.S. Department of Agriculture funding, they have a rural development program that funds water and wastewater projects. One of the criteria, though, of that funding is that it's for communities with a population of less than 10,000. The project's been successful in having a waiver language submitted by our U.S. congressional representatives, and specifically Representative Capps and McCarthy from the Congress, and then Senator Feinstein have all submitted language that authorizes the Los Osos project to be eligible for this USDA funding and then allows us to apply for funding. Their program is a combination of grants and 40-year financing. We would expect this legislation to be approved this fall, and then we'd be able to submit our application. And this is actually four stimulus funds. There's approximately $4 billion available nationwide. The timing on the stimulus funding is somewhat flexible. They still have approximately two-year time frame to allocate the money. I think the major timing issue for our project is just getting in our application and getting funding approved while there still is funding available, because this is a nationwide program and there will certainly be competition for these funds. We are expecting to seek between 35 and 70 million based on conversations with USDA staff and what we expect may be available. And their typical program typically can have up to 20% of that funding available as grants, which could be a $7 million or more of grant funds. So we're continuing to work on this front and pursue USDA funding. There's and with this funding, compared to some of the other project options, there is potential for some significant monthly cost savings for homeowners. On final item, I'd like to ask Trevor Keith from the Planning Department to give a brief update on some recent developments with the HCP.
Good afternoon, Mr. Gibson, board members. Since your board's direction to accept the Los Osos HCP grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife on June 23, 2009, we have submitted the grant contract to California Department of Fish and Game for processing so we can receive the grant money. I've recently spoke to them, and based on the budget crisis, as we're all aware, on the new furlough, it's going to take a little bit longer to get that in the queue, but it should be coming soon. And then we have now, we're in the finalizing the work program with the wildlife agencies based on the comments from the previous draft of the Los Osos HCP, basically to through completion of the habitat conservation plan. So that's where we are to date.
Rough timeline on that, Mr. Keith?
At the next update, I'll have a much better gauge.
Very good.
I just do want to note that this efforts on the HCP are important for the project as relate to vacant property owners, and the condition in the coastal development permit that habitat conservation plan be completed before new properties can any new development can connect to the sewer project. So this is an important effort in the overall development of the project as it relates to the currently undeveloped property owners. That concludes our update, and we're available for questions.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Waddell or the questions of Mr. Keith? Seeing none, we'll
question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Waddell, I read something over the weekend, I guess, about a I'm not sure if you're aware about a problem that occurred in Cape Cod, Provincetown area in Massachusetts. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am aware of that.
If you could speak to that briefly.
Sure, because it is relevant to our project because it has come up before in our project discussions. It's Provincetown, Massachusetts on Cape Cod. Has a recently constructed sewer collection system that's the vacuum system technology, and it's been it's come up as we've been gone through our project development as a success story for a vacuum system. It was many years in developing, and over the July 4th weekend, they had a leak, had to close 18 beaches. I think they had approximately 50,000 visitors in town. People were being moved out of their homes. Basically, sewage was backing up in homes and in basements and running down the streets. It took about 3 days to find the cause. Basically, it was the pipelines and a vacuum system with the pressures that are created. Something, likely a cell phone, going through the pipes basically broke the pipe. And once there's a hole, then there's no vacuum created to then move the sewage through the system. So then it backed up in homes and caused significant disruption and significant spills in the community. Not to get down on vacuum systems per se, but what that really illustrates is that collecting sewage has risks and potential spills or failures on an isolated and occasional basis, and sometimes they're obviously more impactful than others, but that in planning a project, there are always the unforeseen risks that can occur, and need to be planned for. And basically every system has its advantages and disadvantages, and different risks in different areas.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Waddell. With that, seeing no other questions, we'll open it to the public. Start with Dr. C. Height, followed by Don Bearden.
They said they were going to. It's not on yet. Okay,
is the document
fake? It's not. The document's not on yet.
Okay.
Do I just turn it off and on every time I want to put a document? There is no document on the plate yet. I just. Okay.
Got it.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos. I really hated leaving my garden today to come down here and feel powerless, and I think that a lot of the people of Los Osos feel powerless. Did I have a right to have an unbiased survey process? Yes, I did. Did I have a right to have accommodation, or at least to find out about accommodation so I could read the draft DIR for the Los Osos sewer? Yes, I did. Do I have a right to choose where I live without the government telling me where I can live, where I have to move, what kind of situation I have to live in? Yes, I do. I think a lot of the people of Los Osos feel really powerless, and I just want to say that it's my personal opinion that anyone who pretends that a $250 a month sewer bill is not going to affect home ownership is just pulling my leg. And you pull my legs, they just get longer, and I'm already pretty tall. And I'm inviting the public to come to my garden on July the 27th at 9:30 and see how I get pulled, how my legs get pulled over home ownership. Because there are some really serious issues about Los Osos that are really being overlooked, and that's the demographic. My mother is contributing her sewer bill to the cause. It's $33 and some odd cents a month to live in a resort community overlooking a lake. Does my mother have a right to live in a resort community overlooking a lake without being taxed $250? Yes, she does. If she was hit by her county with a $250 sewer bill, we would consider it a scam. We would consider that it was a potential elder abuse. And she's retired from the district attorney's office of Butte County, so I believe she understands she has rights. And her decision to stay in her home now is dependent on what her bills are. She can do very well, but she would not be expecting a $250 sewer bill when it's only 33. I'm a minister of peace and I am legally ordained, and what that means is I am obligated by law to not look the other way. If a senior or a disabled person is being abused physically, emotionally, or financially, and we're describing the demographic of Los Osos when you talk about the seniors and disabled on fixed incomes. I want to believe that I'm not powerless. I want to believe that the people of Los Osos are not powerless. I want to believe that I have a voice and that this is not being swept under the table, but you should have sent it back. You should have sent it back when it said $250.
Thank you, Dr. Height. Mr. Bearden, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Height, excuse me, just a sec, Don. Dr. Height, clerk needs the photos. Mr. Bearden, thanks.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. I passed out a couple of pages to you. The California Coastal Commission met last week on two occasions. Peter Douglas, Executive Director, made comments on the Los Osos Wastewater Project. Enclosed are my transcriptions of those comments, and the location on the Coastal Commission website where you can listen for yourselves. They were following public comment right after lunch in case the public wants to look for them. Among other things, Mr. Douglas said that, in his opinion, the Tanini site was a non-starter under the LCP, and that we should not be wasting time and resources trying to convert that site. Also, the San Luis Obispo Planning Commission is contemplating major changes to the proposed Los Osos wastewater project. The most controversial change is moving the wastewater plant and spray fields from the Tonini Ranch site to the Giacomazzi Brannan Cemetery sites. I'm not sure any of these owners are willing sellers. Relocating the wastewater treatment plant to the Giacomazzi site will result in lawsuits, delays, and community uprisings similar to the ones brought about by the selection of the Midtown site. The people around Giacomazzi site don't want a wastewater plant there that they are barred by the Coastal Commission from using. The cemetery lawyers have said that they oppose any attempt to locate this project on property or close in proximity to the cemetery. I believe the real solution is to locate the plant at the Midtown site. The Coastal Commission has approved the Midtown site once before, and it already has been litigated. The Planning Commission meets again on July 23rd and 24th to continue discussing this matter. I urge all affected parties to attend these meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. Ms. Taylor, followed by David Dugan.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos, the Prohibition Zone. The Regional Water Quality Control Board placed a moratorium on Los Osos in an area referred to as the Prohibition Zone, with the rationale that nitrates were seeping into the groundwater and the estuary due to septic tanks and leach fields. Now, an expensive sewer project is soon to be imposed on the same area that the Water Board placed the prohibition for development on. The Water Board is issuing letters allowing the installation of septic tanks for a development of 10 residences with 2.5 baths to 3 baths per residence plus water-using facilities, in addition to a motel with 6 bedrooms plus hot tubs and a child care facility for approximately 24 children in the prohibition zone. This is a prohibition zone. Since 1992, the county was advised of saltwater intrusion into the Los Osos water basin by county staff, but has taken no action to address the problem. The county was advised of nitrates in the wells and the supply of our drinking water in the 1970s and told by the Water Board to take action, but the county did not take action. Albert Einstein once said, "The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different answer or result." The Los Osos water basin is losing its viability due to the county's inaction. This is where the insanity begins. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Dugan, followed by Al Barrow.
David Dugan, Los Osos. Why is it taking so long for the Planning Commission to get this work done? Why is it so confusing? Maybe the materials they're having to work with are confusing. Maybe the staff are the authors of confusion. Why do we just heard an attack on the vacuum system above and beyond what gravity or even step could give us? I believe is the most preferred environmentally preferred collection system. Why the attack now? Why even attack it? It wasn't even part of the fine screening or rough screening. It was eliminated prior to even hiring engineer analysis people, the consultants, before CEQA was even worked on. It was eliminated as a viable collection system, prohibition zone wide. So why attack it now? Because the Planning Commission is looking at that as an alternative collection system? What is the purview of the Planning Commission as a responsible agency? They can change this project, and if you don't meet those changes, you're not going to get your permits. Of course, I think it comes to you guys as an appeal. Coastal Commission is hot on it. They don't like this project either. I think from the beginning, I remember, do this right. Do not try to circumvent the process. Study all alternatives and their cost. And to hear this 11th hour attack on the vacuum system really assures me that there is something going on, especially when it's not even being considered, except by the Planning Commission now. This process has been circumvented. Both the Coastal Commission and the Planning Commission say they don't like this project for various reasons. It's not the environmentally preferred project, it's the county's preferred project. That is opposite of what CEQA's trying to tell you to do. They want the environmentally preferred project, unless costs make it unfeasible. But if you don't have a study on all the collection alternatives, all the treatment alternatives, how are you going to say the cost is a factor here? You don't have that assessment. CEQA, Title 14, California Code of Regulation, clearly states that you have to look at all alternatives, and if that has not been done, any responsible agency can shut this project down or change it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Mr. Barrow, followed by Gail McPherson.
Good afternoon, board members and public. My name is Alfred Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, Citizens for Affordable and Safe Environment. The environmentally preferred project in the last final EIR has been taken off the table by Chairman Gibson's caveat. Competing viable technologies in the fine screening will not be costed by bid, taking away the opportunity for a more affordable project. The California Coastal Commission said any of the four projects in the preferred project are not permittable. As past director of Land Conservancy, Slow Planning Commissioner, you know the LCP, Local Coastal Plan, that mediates the project, and the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, 461 pages of it, which enforces it. Is it your position that the county is above the law? Shovel-ready project, hardly. Montgomery Watson has designed a gravity sewer with a minimal slope for 80 gallons per person per day. We are presently at 60 gallons per person today and moving towards 45 gallons per day. That will not move the solids through the collection system as designed, and you will give us a project that is not a gravity, but a vacuum truck project. Crews will hook up to potable water supplies, fire hydrants, to flush the lines to the next manhole, where it will be removed by truck to the treatment plant, increasing operation maintenance up to $200,000 a year. This is not a gravity collection system. If the gravity does not move the sewage, it is a black sewer. Business communities will lose $1.5 million in disposable income. Schools will lose clients and income. Families will have to scrimp on already tight budgets. No vacations, no clothes, new clothes, nutritional food, higher transportation and medical costs, while lower equity in homes and retirement funds, 25% to be precise. Many of these people are dear friends and neighbors that I know and care for, their kids and their pets. They are hardworking, responsible people, citizens. Many are seniors with disability. You're levying a tax that is 10 times what other communities pay for the same service. These people that I care about, it is personal. Where is your compassion? Please reconsider this project. Put Stepstag back on the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Ms. McPherson, followed by Keith Weimer.
Before, sorry, I just want to mention OES. Office of Emergency Services tracks all sewer spills, and in California there are thousands of them, and I suggest you just go on that site and take a look. I didn't realize my time had started, sorry. Without introductions, I guess. I wanted to tell you that that AB 2701 was called an extraordinary transfer of powers by legislative analysts. That transfer of power was to you. And the Los Osos project is not supervisor district-centric, as many other projects are that you look at. The project falls upon each of your shoulders equally, and it's my hope that you'll deal appropriately with the challenges before you today and in the weeks to come. The concern has always been about cost. There's a lot of other things out there, but cost is the single common issue in Los Osos, and it has been in virtually every survey. That's the only thing that's gone on for 30 years that everyone agrees on. Project cost savings are realized through three things. The first is, of course, the competitive process of design-build. You've lost that, and I've detailed that in many of writings, but it can't happen unless the project criteria will allow competitive and creative alternative designs and differing technology to compete. And that's been blown out. That's gone. The work to drive down cost is what people believed when they were voting for the 218 vote. Guaranteed maximum price, no change orders. That's what design-build has as part of its the most important element. And the only way to arrive at best value for the community is to have a guaranteed, no change orders, guaranteed maximum price. The project does not have that. There's grants, and grants are the only thing that's going to bring down the cost. And there's funding. And the funding has been already outlined as SRF funding. That's not going to change appreciably. The worst thing that drives up costs is corruption. Corruption always leads to higher costs everywhere. We know that. Corruption can be innocent. But bid rigging is not foreign to the county or other agencies. And, of course, it causes harm, and taxpayers pay the price. I believe the bid rigging has occurred in subcontracts, in bid suppression, some complementary bidding, and it's gone on for a long time here. I hope that you'll contact your own experts to go over some of the things that have been raised. Since the inception of this project with you, in the county's taking over the project from Los Osos, I have stressed the requirement for a clean process. I ask the community to pull together on a process and support it and trust the process, guard the process. I ask that you make a motion to vote to investigate the irregular contract procurement process, a vote to remove the delegated authority from staff to do the contract procurement and award.
Thank you, Ms. McPherson.
You would ask a third party for oversight, as I've asked before. Thank you so much.
Mr. Weimer, followed by Frank Acilio.
Just wanted to make sure that you got this handout. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Supervisors. My name is Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. What you are looking at is the progress of seawater intrusion since 2005. That's in green. And what's in yellow is the progress of seawater intrusion for the 20 years prior to that. So we're talking about what at least appears to be a major increase in the rate of seawater intrusion in the basin, 4 to 8 times as fast. What the next slide here, or the next overhead shows, is a cross-section, and I just wanted to point out a couple of things here. The first overhead actually showed Zone D seawater intrusion progress, and as you can see, the actual front edge of seawater intrusion is way under the downtown or commercial area. Also, I wanted to point out that Zone E is a huge aquifer, so we're talking about massive amounts of water being contaminated, huge percentages of the basin. And the final overhead just shows you where we are in relation to the entire basin and the fact that it tapers off, so the progress could even be more rapid. Seawater intrusion is out of control in the Los Osos Valley water basin, and immediate action is needed. Waiting even a few years could be too late. That's why the Los Osos Sustainability Group is asking you to support the Planning Commission conditions on the Los Osos Wastewater Project for 20% conservation and using all the recycled water beneficially at project startup. The Los Osos Sustainability Group is also now asking your board to implement a basin-wide management plan to stop seawater intrusion by stopping all pumping causing seawater intrusion within 1 year of project startup. That will take about 800 feet of reduced pumping. This can be done by maximizing conservation, ag reuse, and ag exchange with the project, and by implementing a basin-wide plan that does the same thing. We provided you a sustainable basin plan earlier, and we provide you an overview of this now to show how it can be done, and we offer our help. You didn't create the problem, but you're the only ones who can fix it. It must be done now, and it must be done with a basin-wide ordinance. You are the only ones who can enact such ordinance. You are about to okay a $100 to $200 million wastewater project that won't be worth a dime if the basin is lost. What it comes down to is this. You can fix the problem with all the means at your disposal, or you can preside over what may be and what is likely to be one of the biggest environmental, social, and economic disasters this county has seen or is likely to see in the future. The decision is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Weimer. Mr. Acilio, followed by Julie Tacker.
Frank Acilio, Los Osos. I'm going to focus on the affordability issue this time. As you may have read in Monday's paper, the Tribune, the local section, San Joaquin Valley farmers thirst for help. There's water problems in San Joaquin. Farmers are out of work. Farm workers are not working either. There's a very strong shortage of water in that area. You may have read in a couple weeks ago where the aqueduct is sinking in some areas because of overdraft underneath the aqueduct of the water. So water is very important, and this project has always been confusing for me because it always said it's a wastewater project, not a water project. In January 30th, 2009, the comments to the DEIR from the Los Osos Community Advisory Council, they put out a paper saying concerns about affordability and the impact that the wastewater system would have on the people in the Prohibition Zone. In April 16th, 2009, to the Planning Commission, again, affordability. This is by the Los Osos Community Service District. They also said the cost of any any features above the minimum requirement of the Regional Water Quality Board must be borne by all users of the groundwater basin. You look at the letter that you received. It was dated May 15th, 2009, by the Regional Water Board. They're concerned with the project and encourage you to maximize wastewater use and water conservation. You listen to the Coastal Commission on July 9th, 2009, section, if you go 5 hours, 11 minutes, and 28 seconds, you'll go right to Peter Douglas's comments regarding his concerns as a Coastal Commission staff member regarding water reuse, seawater intrusion, pollution, and site. Actually, Katja was there, and you can verify or you can get information additional from him since he was sitting right over there. I requested information regarding well use in Los Osos from the health department, environmental health, and they said there's over 350 wells that they have records of. There's some wells that they don't have. A third of our basin's pumped by private wells. Now, if you look at the thing I gave you about my correspondence with Supervisor Gibson, my concern is that additional cost is going to be for seawater intrusion put on the people in the Prohibition Zone. This is a basin issue. It's not a Prohibition Zone issue. Seawater intrusion affects everybody in that basin, and everybody uses that water, and everybody should be responsible for paying for that water. So I encourage you. I'm thankful that Supervisor Gibson gave his stance. Now I hopefully that the rest of you would see that it's a basin issue and not a water purveyor issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Acilio. Ms. Tacker, followed by Ryan Galasso.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Tacker. I'm a 38-year resident of Los Osos. This is Jack Edwards. He's a 19-month resident of Los Osos, and it's nap time. Today I'd like to speak about the topic of money, in that your staff report, the written staff report, did not include a project budget as we've seen in months prior. Mr. Waddell did speak to that, but having it in front of you, I think, in front of all of us, would have been helpful. He says there's some $250,000 that's allocated but not spent, and I'd like to see that money get reallocated towards a better project. The Planning Commission is tweaking your project, and I think you need to respond. Presentations on affordability and stimulus money are pie in the sky. We've seen carrots on sticks before in Los Osos. And this, these types of PowerPoint presentations have been presented to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. They've been presented to the Planning Commission. And let me tell you, I don't believe the Coastal Commission will be impressed with these stick and carrot type productions. What they would be impressed with is a wastewater project that incorporates some innovation. We have solar available to us. We have cogeneration available to us. We have low energy available to us. We have ponding available to us. These things would make the project better. Moreover, what would be impressive is if you walked away from this meeting today and directed your staff to make the changes now. Don't let the Planning Commission do it. You're the applicant. Do the right thing and bring the proper project through the process for the public. And it's, by the way, it's on our dime.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Ms. Galasso, followed by Chris Allaby.
Okay. Ryan Galasso, Los Osos. The Planning Commission has been working diligently to understand the complexities of the Los Osos wastewater project, identify weaknesses, and find solutions. At their late June meeting, several speakers started off comments, not with their concerns, but with, "I talked to Bruce Gibson and he said." One speaker explained to the Planning Commission how we needed to trust our elected officials and our county engineers because we needed to get the project shovel ready quickly for stimulus funding. Shortly after these late June meetings, county staff was encouraging a public letter writing campaign to short circuit the Planning Commission's decision not to use the Tonini site. Then, at the Coastal Commission meeting on July 9th, after Keith Weimers gave the commission an update on the rapid increase in the rate of seawater intrusion at the Los Osos Basin, and Frank Casilio presented evidence that the county has known about the seawater intrusion problem since the early 90s, Director Peter Douglas, responding to commissioner questions, stated, "We are trying to give the county some guidance and direction to avoid a train wreck at the end of this line, and that's where we're headed." For example, they picked a prime ag land site, the Tonini site, out of the water basin for a facility, and we have told them that this is a non-starter under the LCP. He also said that along with proper siting of the facility, the lack of beneficial reuse, the way the collection system works, contamination of the drinking water, seawater intrusion, and addressing water needs in the basin all need to be properly addressed. Mr. Douglas' hope was that the Planning Commission would be able to adequately deal with this multitude of issues. The staff has spent about $7 million so far, and the result is a train wreck. Dedicated citizens of Los Osos came here week after week warning you of these very issues. Mr. Gibson, when you became chair, you chose to limit Los Osos' public comment time, saying that you had heard it all before. But were you actually listening? To what you, our Board of Supervisors, can help resolve the problems Director Douglas identified. Number one, by adopting the Planning Commission conditions. Number two, by using the Los Osos Sustainability Group Conservation and Water Management Program. And three, by creating a strong basin management plan to stop seawater intrusion within 1 year of project startup.
Thank you, Ms. Galasso. Mr. Allaby, followed by Jeff Edwards.
I'm sorry, Chris Allaby, CDO number 1019. Back in the 70s, we were told that we needed a wastewater project because of excessive nitrates in the water supply. And probably the primary reason we needed it, because Uncle Sugar was going to pay for it, and we could use the money and the jobs. Cabrillo Estates opted out of the project, and we're allowed to do so by CSA 9 member George Rathmel, who created the prohibition zone with a pencil. There was no science or anything else behind it. If you want it out, he just penciled you out. The okay. The local citizens here at Los Osos eventually figured out they didn't need a project. Then it all started. The recalls, the re-elections, the surveys, and getting us up to where we are now. Nitrates are out, now saltwater intrusion is in, and apparently the septic tanks, leach fields, are the only thing holding it back right now. The, we can't say what's going to happen until we spend $200 million on a project. The county doesn't seem to have an answer to that except, well, we'll find out after we built the projects whether it's successful or not. Well, if that project fails, we are sunk, people. The project can't help saltwater intrusion. Let's get some honest answers here. We're looking at eminent domain on our houses at 50 cents on the dollar. And you don't spend $200 million on a maybe. Eventually, unless we grow fins and tails, we'll be getting our water down at Trader Joe's and taking sponge baths for the rest of our lives. That's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. Albee. Mr. Edwards, followed by Fred Collins.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 30-year resident of Los Osos, and this afternoon I wanted to briefly speak on the Habitat Conservation Plan. An HCP is an incidental take permit that allows the taking of the respective species. It's not a simple matter. Others have tried. It's both expensive and very time-consuming. I've personally been involved in preparation of them. The community of Los Osos has been under siege for the last 30 years by the Department of Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You may remember the kangaroo rat that existed in the 70s and 80s. And then, quite conveniently, the Morrill shoulder band snail was listed in the mid-90s. The cave rat was thought to have become extinct. Numerous public and private projects have been frustrated by these so-called endangered species. Our community library, the El Morro linear bike path was delayed for years. We have numerous other traffic and pedestrian infrastructure projects that have simply been nixed. There's an array of private projects on infill lots outside of the prohibition area. And probably most importantly, the two water purveyors in the community, Golden State Water Company and the LOCSD, they've had projects frustrated by the presence of these so-called endangered species. I'd like to make some recommendations about embarking on this HCP, and then I have some questions if you are serious about pursuing it. First recommendation is I'd hire a contractor that has proven track record. They've achieved approved HCPs. That a steering committee be formed to include landowner participation. That thirdly, credit be given for the greenbelt that's already been established in the community, well over 300 acres. And fourthly, manage these resource agencies. Don't let the Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service run amok, and they will. I have several questions for you to consider, and perhaps staff can address them. Is the kangaroo rat going to be included in the incidental take permit? Because it's my understanding that the state particularly will not allow a take of the K-rat. So if you can't get a take permit for a K-rat, what are we really doing? So is the K-rat included under the incidental take? Number two, if the county doesn't take over the Los Osos wastewater project, what's the outcome of the HCP? Where do we go from there? Thirdly, when are RFPs going out to so-called qualified consultants where they can propose to prepare this document? And then lastly, What's the budget for the total work plan? There's about $500,000 allocated for the HCP so far, but that's not nearly enough, and staff has suggested as much. So what's the ultimate cost going to be? Thank you very much, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Collins, followed by Lindy Owen.
Chairman, supervisors, my name is Fred Collins. I'm tribal administrator for the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. We're the only governing Chumash body located in San Luis Obispo County. We're here to reinforce the importance of our ancestors in Chumash traditional tribal land. This tribal land includes Los Osos completely. Very important to us to protect the ancestors. The ancestors can't speak for themselves. It is our duty to speak for them. The entire Chumash Nation stands behind the Northern Chumash Tribal Council and our job and our duty to make this project go forward with protecting our ancestors the best that we can. One of the things that recently I spoke at the Planning Commission meeting, and we weren't happy with the progress of the way the county is communicating with the Native community, especially the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. And one of the things just recently the Planning Commission stated it could be misinterpreted is that we can just jump around and move this site to site, from place to place, and just monitor this project. Monitoring is not mitigation under CEQA. Very important to us that you realize that these ancestors have been here for us for 9,000 years. Recently, the Native American Heritage Commission has made a decision to insert a Selenian splinter group into Chumash tribal land. We will not stand for this. The Selenian tribe, the splinter group, has only been here since the mission period. Our ancestors are over 9,000 years old in the Los Osos area, and there will be many of our ancestors hit in this project. It's going to happen, it has happened, and we're going to be here to protect it. We're not here just to monitor. What we do, and I'm sitting down with Kate Valentine from the county, and we're moving forward in a meaningful way. And this means looking over the engineering structure of this project, looking how deep we're going to be digging, how wide we're going to be digging, all the sites that we're going to be encountering. We want to know all the specifics. All this information has been held back from us till recently. After I spoke at the meeting, Planning Commission, Kate Valentine has been very forthcoming. She's probably the best thing that this county has going for it right now. So we are moving forward in a meaningful way. We're going to be looking at the engineering. There's going to be engineers at our meeting that we're going to be as scheduled for August, the week of August 3rd. And it is our duty to make sure that it's done right. We have no choice. Our window to object to what's going to happen here is very small. I can move things from one spot to another, and that's what we'll be attempting to do in a small way to save the ancestors. And we need your support. The Chumash Nation needs your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Ms. Owen, followed by Chuck Sasanian.
Lindy Owen from Los Osos again. I first want to discuss Mr. Hill's. That was almost like a theater piece for you to come up and say, oh, and what about that little leaky vacuum system? And perfect response. You were ready for it. It was beautiful. What I'd like to do is, if you'd like, I'll email you the gravity sewer spills that come out in the paper, probably three a week, so that you could just know that gravity sewers leak constantly. And then, you know, Cape Coral in Florida, maybe you'd like to have a good explanation from Mr. Waddell about how Montgomery Watson Harza is involved in a huge bid rigging and overcharging, and also bankrupted their town with a, whatever, gigantic Cadillac sewer. You know, I would appreciate some balance. And I'm going to expect it, and I'll call you on it every time I see this game going on. What is this? You against us. Our town simply wants to get a green, sustainable sewer. We want to get it built fast. We could have had it built back in the 2000, but Montgomery Watson Harza showed up, and Pava Ogren got involved, and the whole thing went south. Now, I don't know how many million we're into this. $45 million has been spent. I would like to be flushing my toilet knowing that we did it right. I'd like people coming out to our community looking at the award-winning design that we put together. Instead, we've had 2.5 years, we've spent $7 million, and we have a planning commission that's just throwing apart what was put together by staff who have never built a sewer before. I'm sorry, this is just getting ridiculous. Let's get on with the project. Let's stop fighting with each other. You know that green technology that works is worthwhile. I want the design build put back in place. I want the attitude that was going on that just made Lyle's Corporation basically turn and say, screw it. Why go to Los Osos and fight Montgomery Watson Harza? We didn't ask you to build us a corporate sewer. We didn't ask for a Cadillac sewer. There are alternatives that are about half that price, that are energy efficient, that are green, that are easy to put in, that don't destroy the Chumash grave sites. Why can't we go there? I'm waiting for an answer from all five of you. I think I've heard it from Mr. Meacham, and I do appreciate it. And I've heard from Cacho, can't say that last name, that it's up to Mr. Gibson. But Mr. Gibson has been the most obstinate problem in this whole situation. And I'm sorry, I don't know who you bow to, but you better begin to consider that our community needs you. Thank you.
Chuck Cicinia, followed by Elaine Watson.
Good afternoon, Board. Chuck Cicinia here, speaking as a private citizen in Los Osos. Today, I'm reminded of the first time I addressed the Los Osos CSD on this project. It was December of 2003, and I had just discovered that the engineering reports clearly stated that it would be cheaper to build and operate a wastewater project with a treatment plant at the environmentally preferred site out of town. Even though the 2001 EIR had contained a statement of overriding considerations, alluding to the lower cost of a centralized collection system as the reason the plant had to be built in the middle of town. In my mind, that was fraud, plain and simple. I remember stating that I was trying to convince myself that it was the consultant who had constructed that deception because it hurt too much to believe that public officials could have been responsible. But being a lifetime staffer at a public works agency, I know that consultants rarely go where they're not directed to go, and they certainly would not override their own conclusions with a deceptive statement of overriding considerations. Your public works department just spent $7 million on an EIR that didn't satisfy your own agricultural policies, much less the coastal commissions. If you're not shaking in your boots either out of anger or fear, something's wrong. The questions asked by your incredibly brave and honest planning commission and the comments from the Coastal Commission are leading the project back to something very similar to the 2006 project update the Los Osos CSD had prepared, a project with treatment facilities north of the cemetery, effluent disposal based on agricultural reuse programs within the Los Osos groundwater basin. The only difference is we believe the STEP system with its total fusion-sealed collection system would be necessary to deal with the infiltration and inflows inherent in a gravity collection system. The extra cost of treating more water than necessary because INI from high groundwater and the possibility of salt water leaking into the collection system rendering the effluent unsuitable for reuse made a truly sealed system imperative. The fact that this system was guaranteed to be 20% cheaper than a gravity system in your public works department's RFQ process makes it even more attractive. Why was STEP ignored when it came time to shortlist the so-called qualified engineering teams? Public Works says the 20% savings wasn't enough, and the engineering team wasn't intimately familiar with Los Osos, in spite of the fact that the Lyles team included Ripley Pacific, the author of the CSD's 2006 report. This proposal was credible enough to be included in the 2007 water reuse textbook co-authored by George Jovanoglis of the National Water Research Institute, a nonprofit research firm that was hired by your public works agency to look at their proposal. He stated he was struggling not to use the word gravity biased. Your $7 million EIR discarded a STEP system from further consideration because of faulty greenhouse gas emissions. I got too much. You have to bring the design build process back into control. Take it away from the public.
Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me. Elaine Watson, followed by Dr. Mary Fullwood.
Elaine Watson, Los Osos. Excuse me, I'm hoarse today. This is going to be simple. You all are obviously aware of the position that the
Planning Commission, the Coastal Commission, even water purveyors, Golden State, have taken on the use of Tonini and Springfields outside our water basin. They're saying the very same things that Los Osos residents have been coming here and saying for many, many, many months now. Tonini, in the words of the Coastal Commission's executive director, is an impending train wreck. A train wreck because, once again, it uses prime ag land and literally wastes vast amounts of our precious water. Getting rid of Tonini is just the first step. Water must come back to our basin, and we must stop seawater intrusion. The one and only way we can accomplish this is through conservation. A Pacific Institute report found that California can meet its water needs for the next 30 years by implementing off-the-shelf, cost-effective urban water conservation. Keith Weimer and the Los Osos Sustainability Group have brought you eminently implementable suggestions on how to do it. And do it and begin it now, with ordinances if necessary. Retrofit low-use toilets, showerheads, washing machines, xeriscape landscaping, etc. Begin water audits with leak detection and repairs. Over the longer term, initiate LID technologies. Build a collection system that is least prone to leakage and breakage. And despite the Providencetown event, this would still probably be small seal pipes. Design a disposal recharge system that efficiently returns our water to our basin. Be certain treatment is as sustainable as possible. I've handed you all a short list of reminders of the state of water in today's world. This is a list from information on the Food and Water Watch website. Remember, the whole state of California is in a water crisis. The Colorado River is anticipated to go dry by 2021, 11 short years away. Los Osos is unique and very fortunate. We have our own water source. Overpumping and misuse can no longer be tolerated. Everyone who takes from this basin must participate in sustaining it. It is your responsibility to help us sustain and maintain a healthy, viable basin. It is eminently doable. It is just a matter of vision and your political will to make it so. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Dr. Fullwood, followed by Martha Golden.
Hello. My name is Dr. Mary Fullwood, the Los Osos representative for SLB Surfrider and the Sierra Club representative on the Marine Interest Group. Surfrider and Sierra Club are very pleased with the deliberations of the Planning Commission and the conditions it is setting forth, moving the treatment location into the water basin, increasing treatment to tertiary, increasing water conservation measures to 20%, and fusion sealing 12% of gravity collection pipes. Surfrider and Sierra Club continue to support STEP as the environmentally preferred technology as designated in the 2001 LOWWP FEIR and request that your board advance STEP to the RFP design-build process. STEP is a 100%, not 12%, fusion-sealed pipe solution, and unlike gravity, sealing the pipes does not become cost prohibitive. As established by the fine screening, it is already 20% less expensive than gravity collection when gravity is evaluated at 0% fusion sealed and not increased to 12%. Additionally, STEP does not involve large pump stations on ESHA, including the Midtown site that will collect 1.2 million gallons per day, 1/2 mile uphill from the State Marine Reserve before sending it out of town for treatment. Gravity collection can become prohibitive regarding water conservation measures. As described by sewer experts Ronald Kreitz and George Chivoniglis, the minimum flows required for gravity flow sewers to operate make them problematic where water conservation reduces the wastewater flows significantly. In many cases, the water used to flush conventional gravity flow collection systems for the removal of accumulated solids far exceeds the water saved through water conservation measures. Furthermore, STEP treatment requires a smaller footprint than gravity, making it more doable on the Giacomazzi site. STEP pretreatment tanks would capture such items as cell phones to prevent the rupturing of its pressurized lines. If STEP can provide the benefits that the Planning Commission is conditioning for the LOWWP and be more affordable within these parameters, why wouldn't it be advanced to the RFP? Lyles has had a 100% advancement rate to RFPs until this project, and the reason given was that they didn't show intimate understanding of the issues in Los Osos. The Planning Commission has shown otherwise because Mr. Ripley, one of Lyles' consultants, has provided detailed, intimate input at the PC hearings. Additionally, Lyles is planning to bid a guaranteed maximum price proposal to prevent hidden costs during construction from occurring. The Coastal Commission has expressly stated an approvable project differs from what is currently envisioned and, in fact, is more likely to be a permutation of the best components of these alternatives and other concepts identified to date. Full mitigation of this project's impacts for coastal resources will be unlikely unless actual costs and innovations of step collection technology are evaluated alongside gravity. Please utilize your authority and advance step to the RFP.
Thank you, Dr. Fullwood. Ms. Golden, followed by Richard Margetson.
Mark Golden, Los Osos. Good afternoon. I don't want to take up a lot of your time, so I just want to join in the remarks that you have heard concerning conservation and saltwater intrusion. The Los Osos Sustainability Group has presented to you more than once, and again today, plans that would help solve the saltwater intrusion problem. The Planning Commission was alarmed at the information they received about the saltwater intrusion in the basin. The Coastal Commission staff members are highly concerned, and hopefully the Coastal Commissioners are concerned about the fact that the basin is going to be destroyed if we don't stop saltwater intrusion. It is time for this board to direct staff to start looking at solutions that have been presented as doable solutions instead of having a staff that recalcitrantly goes out and tries to oppose every kind of change that would be environmentally sound and sustainable in our basin. So much for that. By the way, we've seen a kind of a little example of that, a little dance here today, which has already been commented upon. Very entertaining. The other thing that I want to remark about has to do with this. We keep hearing, oh, well, Tonini, and there's no problem except all the problems that you have heard about, but goodness, if we go to Jacamazzi and that area, there's going to be terrible opposition from all of the landowners around there and from the cemetery. Well, that may be true. First of all, I think people in the center of town have a bigger right not to have an industrial plant in their community than people out in the country, but I don't want to get into that dispute. I just want to point out that if you, again, directed staff to be a little creative, we could have an environmentally sound treatment system that was not an industrial plant, but used ponding or some other technology which would be green, attractive, inobtrusive, and no doubt, with the slightest bit of education, not opposed by any of the landowners on the proposed closer-in sites that are within the basin, and they would help do the job of stopping saltwater intrusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Golden. Mr. Margetson, followed by Jerry Walsh.
Richard Margetson, I kind of find it interesting that Mr. Hill can pose a question to Mr. Waddell about a treatment plant not located in this state. Mr. Waddell can go on and on about the specifics of what happened there. But at the Planning Commission, when the commissioners ask staff how much it would cost to seal 5.2 miles of pipe in the high groundwater area for 2 days, they couldn't come up with an answer. Funding, $7 million. You heard there's hardly any money left. Everything's been put on hold. I hope a component of this project that has not been put on hold is how we're going to fund this project and the pursuit of the grants and the SRF process and the money from the Department of Agriculture, because at the last meeting there were a number of slides put up about what the funding possibilities were to get the cost down. Well, in consultation with Mr. Diodati, who I'm surprised is not here, I'm also surprised Mr. Ogren's not here today, two of those scenarios have been deemed unfeasible. And one of them is SRF funding with stimulus for 30 years at 1%. The Holy Grail, and I have an email to that effect from county staff, is now out the door. So now what are we banking on? We're banking on the new Holy Grail that was brought before us today. Tonini, Planning Commission, if you watched that meeting, we were there for 2 full days. I was there both days from start to finish. Elimination of Tonini took the commissioners less than a half an hour. It may have been less than 15 minutes if you watch it again. Unanimously, they eliminated Tonini and wanted the project moved inside the basin. For those who want Tri-W back, I want anyone in this county who's been involved with this project to show me a document that says Tri-W is the environmentally preferred project without overriding considerations. And until that comes forward, that site cannot come forward as an option. Peter Douglas, I'm going to reiterate, said Tonini was a non-starter. But on the other issues, he said he has been in constant contact with the county and he's trying to stop a train wreck before the train wreck happens. $7 million, how soon is somebody from staff going to be coming forward asking you for another $1 million to continue? Because you have no money to pay staff as of probably the end of the fiscal year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Ms. Walsh, followed by Ben DeFada.
Jerry Walsh, I jotted down a few notes that I want to talk about when I got here this morning, and though it's not formal, I'd like to bring a complaint to this board. I find it highly inappropriate for county staff on the Los Osos project to lobby via email and stir up sentiment against moving the project closer into our basin from the Tonini site. The recent sentimental letter in the Bay News decrying the Planning Commission's suggestion of moving the sewer plant from the $7 million prime ag land Tonini site because it was next to the graves of deceased military veterans was written by one of the landowners near the cemetery, Mr. Brannon, as a direct result of the email request sent to him by Mr. Waddell. I ask you, is it appropriate for county staff to send such emails lobbying behind the scenes against the County Planning Commission and the Coastal Commission? Was this done on county time? Are we the people of Los Osos paying staff to lobby against saving our water by rejecting spray fields at Tonini and bringing it back to Los Osos? Are you, as supervisors, supporting behind-the-scenes lobbying by staff, or do you find it as highly inappropriate as I do? Thank you.
Ms. Walsh, Mr. DeFada, followed by Alon Perlman.
Good afternoon, supervisors. What can I say? It's all been said. Nothing better on TV, so here I am. Something's wrong here, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Pavel, Mr. Waddell. You continue to stay on this expensive gravity system. I can't believe it. You're asking for money for gravity when it's not even green? 900 manholes? People have to go down into the holes? You know, and they could succumb to the gas. That's not really what I started out. And I'd like you, Mr. Waddell, to repeat what your position is on where the collection is going to be, what it is, I should say, the treatment plant, and location. I want to see your face go red when the report comes from the Planning Commission. Affordability must be number one. It must not be ignored. You, Mr. Gibson, you, Mr. Alcorn, you, whatever your name is again, I forgot already, you're doing a disservice and somebody's going to go to jail. $200 to $300 a month is a massive tax burden for property owners and renters in the Prohibition Zone. One of your previous supervisors, she said if I could wave a magic wand for all this to go away. Well, it's not going to go away until affordability and location is addressed. She asked for $35 million and got $200,000 from Mrs. Capps, big deal. It was very convenient for this guy to talk about the vacuum, how they had a leak. Well, maybe they ought to get thicker pipes. But Mr. Collins over there represents the tribes. You go with either the step stag or the vacuum. It's not so wide. It's not so deep. 22 feet deep is what you're asking for in gravity. I went down the Oceano and took pictures of there. 4 years it was leaking, 20 feet down. 4 years in the sand, it was kept going down and down and down and into the bay. Never came up to the surface till 4 years went by. And you have a prepared speech about something 3,000 miles away that probably was done too cheap on a whatever you call it. The poor will always be with us, but do you have to create more poor if you're expensive, unaffordable, stinking gravity sewer, 900 manholes? Gravity will cost millions more than any alternative system. Our old board started out at $32 million, ended up at $200 million.
Thank you, Mr.
Shouldn't
DeFada.
Shouldn't that be a clue to you?
Mr. DeFada, thank you very much.
We are not your cash cow.
Mr. Perlman, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Alon Perlman from Los Osos. The county did something correct in that they did identify, the county staff did identify the need for a hybrid system, probably because of Cuesta Inlet. One of the problems with gravity pipes are that simply that they're big. They're very big, they have very stiff walls, they have no flexibility. Fusing them does prevent leakage, however, they're very rigid, and being situated in shifting sands with possibilities of earthquakes, with alterations to the water flows, does put a gravity system at risk even if it is fused. If the entire system is fused, it would be incredibly expensive. One of the advantages with either step or with vacuum is not necessarily that the technology is so amazing. It's the fact that when you use very small pipes and you keep them close to the surface and you have them under either positive or negative pressure, you can install detection systems. Or you can actually see the leaks pretty soon after they happen. I wasn't here when Provincetown was discussed, but from what I understand about that report, there were 50,000 people that descended on the town of Provincetown during a weekend, and they only had access to about 600, along the waterfront there were about 600, I imagine some of them are restaurants and have a higher capacity. That's why that system failed. We should be so lucky in Los Osos that our small businesses would have 50,000 people coming in, and then we'll have whatever system fail, because when you overload a system, it does fail. As far as the California Coastal Commission, I saw three things that were stated, that agricultural land allocation was a no-go, that out of the basin was a no-go, and that any consideration other than tertiary was a no-go. I hate to say I told you so, but I submitted to the DIR a submission that, and several other people have done the same, and they clearly identified there's something very wrong with the system when ordinary citizens can come up with the same conclusions that regulatory agencies do. Speaking of the regulatory agencies, unfortunately, due to the fact that the EIR was forced out of an expansion, but due to the fact that the EIR is not really truly there, you've actually given more responsibility to the agencies, because the actual final project is going to be very different than the preferred project. That's just the way things work when you're when you don't properly identify the project. Now we have agencies, and the people of Los Osos are even further out from the decision-making process. So I'll just read to you what I've submitted to the EIR. The county needs to learn from its EIR. This need is hampered by the identification of the preferred project as secondary instead of what is going to happen after further delays.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
The last request to speak, Ms. Schicker.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Schicker, and I live in Los Osos, and I was a previously elected official of the Los Osos CSD, and I would like to express to this board how valuable it is, I think, for you to have at least three of the elected officials regularly, past and present, regularly participating in the process still. As the lady told me in the gym, who I go to a gym, she said, Lisa, you misunderstand. You didn't ask for the sewer to be moved and changed. We did. The people of Los Osos voted several times. And please keep that in mind when you defer to one person on the board. I hope you're not doing that. I don't think you are, but a lot of people in Los Osos voted and wanted things changed. And here we are, $7 million, and a few years back to where we were trying to go before we got everything thrown at us, plus the kitchen sink. Continuing with Director Cecilia's comments, speaking as a private citizen, I want to finish what he had to say. Without a maximum cost proposal from an engineering firm, how are residents for an engineering firm such as Lyle's, how are residents to know how much they could save with a step system? Cost is really crucial. And the extremely small lots in some parts of town could be handled by neighborhood cluster tanks, as two subdivisions already are. The design build process has been totally corrupted by the Public Works Department through their insistence on only allowing gravity at this stage. If you can't do, that's the big question. Why did that happen? Nearly 50% of all current projects at the State Water Board on their funding list are for INI projects, which are caused by gravity systems. They're needing to be repaired. If a step proposal is not allowed on your short list of qualified engineering firms, you should consider taking the project from your public works department and bring back the Design Build Institute, which is guaranteed to be fair and non-corrupt process. I also share the concerns that Ms. Walsh brought up about the staff remaining neutral. It's highly important that the staff, who represents all of the public, remain neutral and not lobby. That's very detrimental to the process. It's not a good thing to do. And finally, as you know, I filed a lengthy complaint. I was late to the meeting. I don't know if Mr. Jensen reported on it. I would like to know about it. And I have prepared for you a 7-page summary. Please, supervisors, just skim the summary. If you do nothing else, skim the summary. Reading from page 3, it now appears that Carollo, Lou Corella, and John Wallace Associates both had financial and business relationships with the applicant MWH through prior LOCSD and county projects, including the LOCSD wastewater project and the design and local lake, and that these projects were supervised by your public works director. Both of these gentlemen served on the interview panel interviewing their former business partner, MWH. Mr. Corella conducted all the reference checks on all the interviews for all the terms.
Thank you, Ms. Schicker.
This is a conflict of interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here's your copies.
We'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, offer staff opportunity to comment on any
items. Mr. Chair, if I could, yeah, before, I just, sure, wanted to apologize to Mr. Waddell for putting him on the spot, and despite what Lindy or some others that are mad about, I haven't actually, until today, haven't seen John for 3 weeks, so there wasn't, what was it? This was my comment.
Excuse me.
My comment, based upon, based on a few things, such as that system being pointed at as an exemplary system, and having friends who actually spend the summers in Provincetown and seeing that they had geysers of raw spillage bursting their manhole covers and closing down beaches for the entire 4th of July weekend. And that was just a comment. You could be mad at me for making it, but I put John on the spot, so he doesn't deserve your ire, but I do.
Thank you, Supervisor Hill. If I could, I'll turn it back to Mr. Waddell and or Mr. Keith. Any comments on public comment?
Well, I will defer to your board for any specific follow-up questions, and just note that many of these items, from collection system to water resources to siting, are still in front of the Planning Commission, and they're having constructive discussions and exploring many of these issues in great detail, and we're waiting to see how it works out and before we would come back to report to your board on those. And then I do want to respond just to the idea of the lobbying residents in regard to the proposed project, and that is something we're definitely not doing. A number of properties were identified in the Planning Commission discussions as potential sites for reuse or disposal of the effluent for basically agricultural reuse, and these sites had not been previously identified in the EIR. Planning Commission had questions on what their feasibility were, so we have been contacting those property owners that were specifically identified in order to get a sense of where they stand on this, whether they're in favor or opposed or neutral. And certainly it's a mixed bag, and those that, whether they're in favor or opposed or neutral, pretty much across the board have the question of how can we make our voice heard. And my advice and others in our department has been, well, you need to either write letters or come and speak at public comment, and those are really the ways to make your voice heard, and that is what individuals are doing, but did not advocate or even suggest any type of a campaign or lobbying for one project or the other. We're just getting information from those property owners at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Waddell. If I could, real quickly, Mr. Keith, species covered by the HCP in Los Osos, can you give us a brief rundown on that?
Yeah. So Trevor Keith, Environmental Division. So I think it's too early to tell which species will be covered. It's part of the methodology that we're going to work through. Morbay kangaroo rat is definitely a potential. It's on our kind of the open-ended list that we're going to work through. And so I think once we move through the process a little bit more, we'll have a determination of covered species. And then if I could just hit a few other points. The RFP, the request for proposals to help on this HCP should be coming out probably late August, early September. And we're under no illusion that this is a costly endeavor. Therefore, in our staff report, we lined out that in April of 2010, we are going to request more funds from U.S. Fish and Wildlife to help with this this effort. And then just to point out that the community-wide HCP, it's going to cover projects. And so I think a lot of the frustration that's out there with snail, other species out there that we need permits for, this is kind of the umbrella incidental take permit, which will allow projects to come in and work under that umbrella. So I think in the end, once we get the incidental take permit, it's going to be a huge benefit to the whole community in total. And I'm available for additional questions.
Thank you. We'll continue with the requests. So Mr. Patterson, followed by Mr. Shaju.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments regarding public comment. A number of you spoke about the need for conservation to reduce your water use to improve the status of the groundwater basin, and absolutely. But I know you all have been involved long enough to know that the county is not the water purveyor in Los Osos and has very limited ability to regulate how water is used there. And you folks, as water customers, do. You can go to the Los Osos CSD, who's a water purveyor. You can go to the other water purveyors and demand that they implement water conservation programs. It's done throughout the nation, and we've been doing it in San Luis Obispo County for years, well over a decade, and I used to be in the business. And I had a lot of association with other water purveyors, and some were very progressive about implementing water conservation programs in their various jurisdictions, and they are successful. They do work, but we can't tell water purveyors to implement those programs. You can, and you should be talking to them in order to do that, so it's a very effective way of reducing the overall water demand, and I suggest you do that. Also, it's been commented that gravity collection systems would somehow impair or adversely affect the ability to conserve water because you have to have a certain volume of water flowing through the systems in order to make them work. And that's true. and I don't know what the threshold is, but having been in the conservation business prior to being on the board, going back 15 years where water conservation standards were implemented, and we went from 5 gallon per flush toilets to 3.5 to 1.6, and now next year we're talking about 1.28. All along, every time there were new standards recommended, people would say, the sewer systems won't work if we do that. Well, that hasn't happened yet, or it didn't happen, at least in the years that I was involved. It was projected to happen, never did happen with systems. So I'm not certain that that is legitimate. It hasn't proven to be yet, but as the volumes get smaller and smaller, it could be an issue. I don't know where that threshold is, but I just wanted, I keep hearing that periodically from folks that the county ought to be doing water conservation, implementing that in Los Osos. We don't have the authority to do that. You do. And the issue of gravity won't work. We can't conserve water if we have gravity, or we can't conserve as much. I'm not sure where that line is, but wanted to share those thoughts with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Mr. Shadji. It could be that my understanding was somehow different than Supervisor Patterson. As you bring the water conservation issue, what I'm hearing, the need or the cry from the community is such that this is a big enough project for us at the same time to address the seawater intrusion, tertiary system, to be part of this project. And that is within our control and or making it part of the project.
Right, and I agree with that. Yeah. Now, that wasn't the issue I was speaking to. Some people were talking specifically about their individual water use, but collectively, yes, absolutely.
Okay, but I want to go back to Mr. Collins, see if I understood his concern. Mr. Collins, your concern, is it that where the plant goes could be a sacred grounds for you, which I'm very respectful of, or the entire system of putting the underground lines so we can properly address that as
well,
the time comes?
You know, we have a very near...
Give us your name again for the record.
Fred Collins, Northern Chumash Tribal Council, Tribal Administrator. We have such a narrow window to do any adjusting to the system. It doesn't matter what system the county picks or what happens out there. So our concerns are that we are up front in the front lines with the engineers and with all the process of this going forward, so that we can assist the county in making proper decisions, so that we can make slight adjustments to move and to avoid sacred sites. Yes, there are, that whole area is a sacred site, Cacho.
Yeah, I'm not questioning, but is it the entire project from A to Z, or where the plant might end up being, the sewer plant?
It's neither. It is the process. I mean, we have no choice about where the plant ends up, or where, or what project, or what you pick.
So
what what we're really concerned with is that we're deeply involved and entrenched with the people that are on the ground making this thing happen, so that we can guide you in a good way, and we can make this thing process in a way that is the best possible that we can.
So the need for you to be part of the process.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. That's
thank you very much.
Nice, my right. question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of a follow-up to Cacho's point there in regard to water, seawater intrusion. One I've never been able to understand is how the line boundary was drawn for the prohibition zone. I mean, it appears to me that all the folks in Los Osos should be participatory, even if they're up on the hill, because it kind of flows downhill, if you will. Now, having said that, if there, in fact, which apparently there is, a saltwater intrusion issue, how are we going to be able to distinguish where that line is drawn in terms of participation to address that? That's a big concern that I have, because there's going to be a cost relative to the water issue, there's a cost relative to the sewer issue, but everybody should be participatory in the water issue.
Well, and we can speak to that, as we have many times before, that the matter of addressing the saltwater intrusion, it being caused by the overpumping of the water purveyors, not by the county. The county's not a water purveyor. The fact that there's saltwater intrusion in Los Osos is the direct result of the water purveyors overpumping the basin. which is why we're in the adjudication, and we have talked about the process of the ISJ. So Mr. Waddell participates in that process, and we've spoken many times at the updates that the project that the team has been working on for these nearly 3 years now is one of treating the wastewater. We know that that is going to result in a flow of effluent that is available on a cooperative basis if the water purveyors seek to use it to address the physical solutions of their overdraft of the basin. But it's not necessary that they do so. In fact, there have been suggestions that they don't need a significant amount. Possibly they don't need any of the effluent to address the overdrafting of the basin. They could be pumping from different aquifers. They could be treating the water differently. They could do a number of things. But that's why Mr. Ogren has on many occasions explained that we really are in an overall process to both treat the wastewater and balance the groundwater basin that's going on two different fronts. And the wastewater project is a particular front that we are pursuing in a way that produces, that allows us to cooperate with the water purveyors if they choose to use it. The ISJ process, really, and the adjudication of the basin, that's eventually going to end up with the physical solutions, and the county's there to participate in that. Both of those efforts are going forward at the same time, and both are equally important to the residents of Los Osos, and both are important to the county in terms of pursuing. In terms of your observation that the overall users of the basin are somewhat different than the population of the prohibition zone, that's been recognized for some time. And in fact, one of the speakers spoke to the question of sharing costs equitably across the basin in terms of those physical solutions. So that's what the ISJ process is aiming at, and that's to be distinguished from the accomplishment of a wastewater system. Mr. Waddell, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add to that discussion.
No, I think you pretty well summed it up. The ISJ right now, I mean, it's a coercive process through the courts, and that the parties are the three urban water purveyors, and then that the county's involvement is basically cooperative in that we, as the agency developing the wastewater project, have an opportunity to, in cooperation with those purveyors, ensure that the wastewater project is beneficial for the water resources of the basin and keeps those interests in mind as the project moves forward. And so we have two separate processes, the wastewater project and the ISJ process, but they're moving in parallel and there is coordination between them, but they are two separate processes.
But I guess, okay, I understand a lot of that, but by the same token, I know that one of the primary focuses of all of this discussion has been surrounded by cost. And so when we get to the point of the cost of everything, I'm not quite sure how this is going to be sorted out, but I'm sure we'll get there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an important result to come out of the Planning Commission is that, as the Planning Commission comes to a final decision on what project they choose to approve, we have to look at the cost of the things that have not been accounted for as of yet. My only comments is that our outreach continues with my office hours, which will be held again, a week from Thursday, that's July 23rd, 4 o'clock until at least 5 p.m. at Sea Pines Golf Course. Seeing no action on this particular item, we will conclude this particular item. We will be adjourning to closed session, and I don't have any requests to speak on closed session, so I'll close it to the public. Bring it back to the board. Before I go to Mr. Jensen for an estimate, I think we might go ahead and entertain a motion to go past 5 just to cover ourselves.
Second.
We have Mr. Ashajian and Mr. Meacham on that motion. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. Mr. Jensen, a rough estimate?
Probably another 90 minutes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So we will adjourn to closed session.
Get an answer as to Mr. Gibson, when are we going to get an answer?